There's no wacky song for this opening, everybody. Normally there's a wacky song that starts it, but this isn't really...
I was ready with the eat the hot, the who with the hot. I was going to take that job over.
Welcome, everybody, to the Super Mario Brothers podcast.
I'm not doing it now.
Oh, you made me awkward. No, this is a bit of a special episode of Super Larios Brothers podcast, and that we really can't even call it a Brothers podcast because I'm the only Larios here. I'm actually outnumbered at the moment by Toons.
We could take it over.
That's right.
The Super Toon Cousins.
Super Toon Brother podcast.
Yeah. It's cousin. Brother cousins, relatives.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Toon males, ages 29 to 25 age range. Yeah.
23.
You're 23?
Yeah, don't make me older.
We're 26. 23?
23.
Jeez.
We're 27, aren't we? Yeah, we're 27.
Well, yeah, I put it in that range of mid to late 30s, but I forget he's so much younger than us, and he's so much more...
accomplished, good-looking.
Like, peck bouncing and everything.
This whole podcast is about your looks, just so you know.
Yeah, like we
good.
Said...
We said it was going to be the wire.
We premised it on the wire, but it's really just to be like, how much can you lift?
It wouldn't be the first time you've discussed my pants on the podcast.
We did. You were rather pectastic, I believe was the word Mikey used. Yes. Scrumptious is the word I think
the
I used.
The produce section at Giant.
Yeah, you're like bouncing cantaloupes off your pecs.
Yeah, exactly.
Impressing the ladies.
Like... You bring up Tommy the first and only time, and it's like, oh, how good looking he is. I think my first story is like, remember that time Sean...
that time Sean screamed at the movie theater
everything's been down, like a bad thing.
And then presumably he lost his job and got high a lot or something.
Drank his photos away.
Didn't get a haircut for a while. Not like still Tommy. Not always perfectly trimmed. What a hunk.
But you see, like, oh, man, that really hurts.
I, you know what? I feel like it's the podcast for you to turn your image around, Sean. Like, it's the chance for you to twist it all around and make a new man of yourself. Take after this guy.
Yeah, there you go.
Start wearing t-shirts a little bit smaller, so it really just highlights.
It's not really shorts weather either. I don't want to say anything. It's definitely not really shorts weather.
If I had legs like those, it'd always be shorts weather. So, no, it is not a Super Larios Brothers podcast. Mikey is not here. He's away with other business, but we still have Sean with... what may be probably the last podcast with Sean, at least for this time.
Most likely.
And then we have with us the ever-elusive Thomas Toon.
First podcast appearance.
His first podcast appearance. Not first mention, though, as you said. There is an entire episode where, like, the first 30 minutes thus being like, remember our cousin Tommy looks like The Rock, but white, and a little bit shorter, but not enough that you care, because he's still just so ripped. You are our younger cousin on Uncle Tom. One of our uncles. You're the second of four kids.
Correct.
And we grew up a lot back when, because you're in Harrisburg. You grew up in Harrisburg.
Yep.
Along with our mom, we lived here. So our families, because John's my age, or John's a year younger than me.
He's a year younger than you.
He's a year younger than me, and then you were just a couple years younger than him.
Yeah.
So generally, anytime any kind of masculine activity went around. Three of us.
We were all involved.
Yeah. Well, it was generally
everyone pulling their weight. I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, their dad was the one who invited me to everything because my dad wasn't around for any of it. So I almost felt like the third Toon kid at points.
Yeah.
I was your older cousin who just knew nothing about sports and did a lot of Pokemon dances with my mouth. Yeah. But we grew up a lot.
Came to all our birthday parties.
Yeah.
Camping trips. Arena football games.
Arena football games.
Don't tell me taking any of those.
Snow camp.
Snow camp, yeah.
Those are good times. There's a lot of classic memories. So there's a lot of good family unity here in this moment. Sean wasn't around as much, living in Jersey.
Thank God.
Kind of felt like he betrayed us a little bit.
A little bit. We had the beach trips every year at Brigantine.
Yeah, that's when we came to us. That was a better time.
Yeah. Play, what did we used to play? 500 that game in the front yard.
I threw a 500 mention at yesterday. Sean didn't react to it at all. I was too afraid.
I do not remember 500.
You just took like a football, and it wasn't even like a real one. It was usually like a Nerf football or something like that. And whoever was it got to throw the ball into the air, and then they just call out a number in midair, like 200. And then the person who caught it got 200, and you had to get to 500.
And then you could throw again.
But the person,
yeah, and then you were the thrower.
But the person who threw it could also just be like, bankrupt, and then you catch it. Be like, what the? Come on.
There was no point because you can just be like, bankrupt.
Yeah,
it was basically like, what cousin do you like?
Yeah, it was like anytime John was about to catch it, he'd be like, two bankrupt. Oh no, John, you're terrible at this.
I have no recollection of that whatsoever.
I'm shocked. If it wasn't raining outside, I'd go out.
It's probably because you like almost died every time we went to the beach, getting bit by.
We didn't talk about that. Yeah. I thought like jellyfish. They wrecked my
shot. And Chris had to be saved by The lifeguards.
Oh, yeah, that did happen once. I didn't mention this last time. That's a story I
shut the entire cover. Beach down.
It didn't shut the beach down. Yeah. He shut the beach down when he got stung by a jellyfish. Do you remember, we mentioned it on the podcast, it's not out yet, though, so you haven't had a chance to listen to it.
Nah.
But when he got stung by the jellyfish, I believe it was, all the adults had to go with him. So it was you, me, and John, like, we were put underneath the lifeguard stand. Mm-hmm. And one of us, I don't remember who it was, said we need to make a bunch of prayers for Sean.
And we really doubt it was me.
Yeah, I don't think it was you. And I'm like, I feel like it would have been John, but I'm like, was it me too? Because I was really close with Sean.
I like vaguely remember playing, like making a sandcastle because I was a little bit younger than you guys, and somebody being like, Sean needs to go to the hospital. And me being like, oh, cool, there's more time for me to make a sandcastle.
Oh,
you being like, I don't have to stop the sandcastle.
Yeah, I'd be waiting for the whole not praying part. I'm all the way, like, I would at least be like, man, I hope he's okay, before I went back to playing.
No, the story where I almost drowned was, Brigantine was kind of infamous for having, like, riptides that would just kind of, like, pull you out. And we got stuck in one. It must have been, like, more than one of us did. But I got stuck in one. I was trying to swim back, and lifeguard clearly saw us and, like, started coming out, and he had, like, the paddle with him, and he's like, hey, bud, need any help? And I did not want to admit I needed help, so I was like, no, I'm good, and I just kept trying to swim back, and he just, like, kind of drifted there for a little bit until, like, he's like, all right, clearly this kid's not getting anywhere, and I was like, yeah, I guess I could use a little help. So I had to, like, grab onto the paddle and, like, be rescued, like, brought in towards shore, and Uncle Tom, of course, was witness to the entire thing, so... It was just a great laugh for him for like 20 minutes. Like, hey, Spree, you need more help than that bodyguard? That lifeguard pulling you in? Is that sandwich too big? Maybe he can cut the crusts off for you. Like, oh, I don't need this from you. But no, we're a close-knit family, so it's nice to have Tommy on the podcast for once.
Yeah.
And as you were mentioning, this is a bit of a surprise because your dad, I mean, it's not really a surprise to mention. We brought up on the podcast a few times, very religious family. Do not recall you tunes swearing at all. It was very, very by the books for you guys. But in time, we've come to realize, oh, Tommy likes The Wire. Tommy likes HBO shows. Tommy likes, you know, getting super ripped and wearing tiny shirts. It's all surprising things for the show.
I do remember one time when you guys came down to Lake Jersey. We weren't going to shore. You came to our house. I don't know why at this point we had to. But I remember... You guys weren't allowed to watch certain Saturday morning cartoons. And at the time, I did not grasp it. Even today, I don't really grasp it. I think... Could you watch Pokemon or something?
Not watch X-Men? I don't remember.
John watched Pokemon, I think. I don't know if you were really much into Pokemon.
No.
But I do remember certain shows.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of... We would watch, like, PBS and Disney Channel, but for some reason, like, not Nickelodeon.
I
don't remember watching, like, Rugrats growing up.
I was going to say, Nickelodeon, I feel like, were the ones that were held off on, like, Rugrats. I'm sure what probably happened is, like, they knew Ren and Stimpy was on that network and heard about it, and they were like, well, the entire channel's just going to be damned off that remark alone.
Yeah, I know there were certain shows we couldn't watch, and then it got to the point when Jack and Diane were born that they were watching, like, the kids' shows, and we just had to watch whatever they were watching. So, that like gave me an excuse to watch Sesame Street for the first 15 years of my life.
You really carried it. Yeah. You really followed them along on the character arcs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like maybe Grover will profess his love to Zoe this year.
It's gonna be the year.
He didn't. I don't think ever. Yeah,
spoiler.
He'll work it up next year. Yeah. I think.
But yeah, I think we're. I started watching Boardwalk Empire because I just heard a lot about that. And
did you have it like at your parents' house HBO?
No, I just watched it online illegally. Just found, you know.
Oh my goodness!
I know. Right?
I'm leaving.
Right, I'm leaving TV shows,
pirating movies, shows. Yeah.
But I started watching that and loved it, and then I had heard good things about The Wire, but honestly didn't know anything about it other than that the guy from Remember the Titans was in it, who Avon. I don't even know the actor's
Wood
name.
Wood Harris?
Yeah, Wood Harris. And I knew that
Idris
Elba...
Who appears in Ant-Man, as everybody
he does,
aware.
Yeah. And I knew Idris Elba was in it. And that was pretty much it.
Plays Heimdall in the MCU. I'm gonna connect any character I can to the MCU possible.
So I knew no other characters except for those two and knew nothing about the show other than it took place in Baltimore. But
I can reference the dude's Black movie, Paid in Full. Some of your viewers must have seen Paid in Full. It's like one of those ghetto movies.
I'm go almost straight positive. To DVD. Unless other friends of yours from Jersey are listening, I don't think anybody who's listening is like, oh, Paid in Full. Yeah, that's
it's
awesome.
Classic. It's probably before The Wire, maybe, I want to say.
I heard a lot
he plays
of our,
exact same character.
A lot of our audience peaked up when they heard us mention Pokemon, and they're tuning out more and more as we mention less of it. So I don't know if Paid in Full is going to bring them back into it the same way, but possibly. So Sean finds it very surprising that you're into all these things, because at one point in time, it is incomprehensible to think of an Uncle Tom kid as being into all that stuff.
Yeah, I can see why you might think that.
Yeah, I didn't see you guys as often as like Chris or them. Yeah, every time we came here, we always stayed at your mom's house and whatnot, and we still would see you, but we'd still be there for like a dinner.
Yeah. Where we would eat all the pizza and not leave any for you guys.
You did.
See, I don't remember that.
It was a thing where when Uncle Tom's kids came by, there was definitely a gang pile on the food real quick, yeah. And you had to get to it.
Now, you guys talked about this on the podcast, and then John and I were discussing it, and our mom would literally starve us the entire day. Whenever we had one of these get-togethers, she would be like, we'd be like, Mom, I'm hungry. Can I, like, make a PB&J for lunch? And she'd be like, no, go eat a bag of chips, because
we're going to grandma's.
We're having pizza tonight. Yeah, so we would literally get starved all day, and then, like, Jack and I would take forever to load up in our big green van, drive over there, and by the time we got there, John and I would just be starving, and we'd be told to fill up, like, eat as much as you can, so we would both eat an entire pizza.
So it's not a lie. No, it really was told to us, like, make sure you get your food before Tom's kids get here, or else...
Yep.
There'll be nothing left.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, but no, I think it's a welcome change to see Tommy being able to embrace. It's something that we're spreading amongst the kids. Do you think we could get John into The Wire?
He watches a lot more TV than I do. Mm-hmm. He's more into sci-fi type of shows.
13 Monkeys or 12 Monkeys.
I know he
watches. Like, is he correcting me in listening to this podcast? Like, it's 12 Monkeys, not 13.
Probably. He watches, I don't know, like 5, 6, 7 TV shows at a time. But
like you said, Kamrani from Harry Potter, where he just does a lick as he turns over to watch more TV at once.
Probably. I know he watches a show with Andy Samberg.
Like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah, I know he watches that. Community is like his favorite show. What's the Marvel one?
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, he watches that.
I'll have to have him on for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast at some
point. He watches more than me. I don't really watch any TV that shows that are, like, live.
You don't watch network TV or anything?
No,
like
I watch The League on FXX.
Can you stomach doing it this year after finding out that one guy lied about him on 9/11?
Yeah, he just ruined it. There was actually a picture right before I was coming over on Facebook. It was, like, a clip from the episode of The Night with him in it. And all the comments are just killing him for that. Every single one. But I watch that, and I watch Workaholics. That's about the only network TV shows I watch.
You don't watch Always Sunny with them?
No, I heard good things. It's on the list.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Both of you. It's a great show.
I've caught a couple episodes here and there. I've just never sat down and watched the whole season. It's just one of those shows, when it's on, I watch it.
Yeah. This summer, though, binge watched The Wire. Probably started in June. Was finished halfway through July.
That's how it was with me, too. Because I started it.
I couldn't stop.
I started back when we were still in the apartment. I started watching, and I think I used to do like an episode a day. Like, I'd wake up an hour before I'd have to go to work, watch an episode of The Wire, go in, and I'd usually maybe catch an episode when I got home or something like that, and I'd binge through it in like a.
Instead of Wake and Bake, Wake and Wire.
Yeah, Wake and Wire. Which is the way it should be, Sean.
I watched a lot of hair.
He's like, I watched it when it was on. You guys didn't help me get a sixth season. No, so this is going to be a Wire podcast. Primarily, we'll probably get off on some tangents, but just in case you're listening, we'll probably try to give a spoiler warning at some point when we start getting into like the actual spoilers of the Wire show. But this is,
like, it ended like 10 years ago. If you haven't watched it by now, I feel
it
like
is.
I knew nothing about it before I started watching. So
yeah, you don't want to open it like, oh, somebody's like, I've heard about The Wire. Is it that good? And before, like, you got to sell them on it before you're like, oh, and then such and such happens, or so and so dies, or whatever. Like, you can't get into like the season 3 big stuff that happens. Yeah. You got to kind of, like, ease the people into it. Because this, Tommy just mentioned, he just got into it this year. You could have ruined it for Tommy. This podcast would have never happened.
That's true.
You blabbed about spoilers, but in podcast, unprovoked.
John Boy was this close to watching it before I ruined it for him.
Yeah.
Just getting like, queued up and everything.
He's like, Brother Mazzone isn't a huge character, the one religious character in the pod in the show? Aw. Although I really see John as more of a presbo.
Yeah, I feel like that'd be inaccurate.
You included. Person right there. Christopher, I see, as a Presbo character.
I see myself as a little bit of a Presbo. He gets things together by the end of it.
It works, yeah.
Yeah. Season 4, he's solid. Season 5, comes back, has a beard. Boom. He really brings it all home.
Yeah. Comes a teacher.
Yeah. Good to go. I'm a teacher in my own way.
Yeah.
Teach of comedy through
podcasts. You're educating your listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Thank you. You really twisted it on there. Yeah. I really kind of feel special and important.
That's not how the podcast works. We make fun of each other.
No, keep this up. Keep calling me skinny and smart. I guess the best way to start, you've already kind of explained where you got into The Wire, and I did a podcast with Mikey at one point where I kind of explained it, but let's hear from Sean how you got into The Wire.
Do you know when the year The Wire started?
I want to say 2004, 2003.
Okay, because if I was like a freshman in high school, or like maybe I was still in 8th grade. Because either, like, it depends, because like things like Sopranos and Oz, that came, like, I was still too young to be allowed to watch it. Mm-hmm. But Corey and Scott will watch it in, like, usually Corey's room, because his room was bigger, and my room was attached to his. So I would sneak from my bed and go watch it with them, because I liked it even then. So once, like, every, like, 20 minutes, the mother would, like, pop in, like, Sean, go to bed. I lay down, wait for, like, 30 seconds, crawl back out to watch more of Oz. So I remember doing that with Oz and Sopranos when I first started. But I think at The Wire, I was just old enough to, like, watch it on my own. At that point, I was such an HBO fan, like, whatever they did. And really, The Wire, like, right away, hooked me. Like, that show was great. Like, off the rip.
I guess to preface this, would we all agree Wire is one of the best shows of television?
Yes.
It's my number one.
Yeah. It would be my number one.
I can't, it's hard to really argue anything being bad. I think maybe like the closest would be like Breaking Bad. I've heard people argue.
Yeah.
The first season of Breaking Bad I do consider like legendary, but Wire is just such a good show. It's one of the few shows I felt like kept getting better as the seasons went on.
Completely agree.
No bad episodes. Like not one episode with a dream sequence all the time.
When there's like lists of like Wire top 50 characters, and there's people who you can make the argument should be on that list. When a show has 50 great characters,
when
you know every single one by name, like if you saw a picture, you could like name who they are.
Yeah, like Rawls didn't make the list. What about the great hilarious cameo scene where he shows up in a gay bar and it's never brought up in the series again?
That's just the most random. How's that not get brought up?
Why
is that even part of that?
How does no one ever rag on him for being at a gay bar?
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler.
Now it's right.
Is gay.
Yeah. Whole show.
John's like, I'm not listening to it anymore. It is one of the best shows. Just the writing in it's incredible. Just the way it kind of bridges those two worlds. If you haven't even heard of the show before, you have no idea what it's about. It's about basically the police and the crime scene in Baltimore, Maryland. Essentially, not current day, but I guess current day back then. So like early 2000s, still at a point where payphones were still in use at points. Yeah. Burner phones were kind of still of age. And it's showing basically the drug war in Baltimore from both sides of the issue. So you see the police trying to nail down these criminals, and then it also focuses on all the criminals, their inner workings, all based on this thing called the game, which is essentially what the drug dealers call the drug trade, you know, anything involved in that societal, kind of cultural environment. And you get a little bit of here and there between them, and then each season focuses on like one different aspect of the city as well. So the first season is about, I guess, the towers. It doesn't really have
that's one strictly kind of the perhaps the cops and robbers season. There's no like other part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no like strong one. The closest you'd say is towers. But season two is where everyone gets white.
Like, this is a successful show. Let's make everyone white. Yeah. Maybe we'll win an Emmy that way.
Highest rated season of the show, too.
I think it might be my favorite.
Season two could. Like, I feel like that could almost have a spin-off show. Like to start off, I was so confused, because I had no idea that it was as different. And I was like, where'd everybody go?
I hate this. You don't see...
The first episode, I hated. And then the second episode on, I was like, oh, this isn't bad. I like this more? Like,
and then you got to the episode with Nico's girlfriend. Yeah. You're like, this is the best episode of the series.
Yeah. Mikey, how did she not make top 50 characters? Obviously,
wait, she didn't?
Obviously number two. I mean, Omar number one, but she should have been number
great
two.
She has so many great quotes, you know?
Great assets on her.
I wonder where that actress is at now. Do you think that's her only claim to fame? Was she was Nico's girlfriend for that one
probably.
Scene?
Probably. Yeah. I know the guy who played Ziggy, like, didn't do anything else, and then was just...
HBO stuff.
Yeah, but he was just in something. I read about him, but... Here's a lot of
wire actors are round. A lot of them have taken on bigger roles. Like the big one would be Timothy Oliphant is Littlefinger in Game of Thrones, played Carcetti in Wire. Mm-hmm. Now Michael B. Jordan is like the big name in Hollywood right now.
A big star. I know there's a few actors who actually started like clubs and stuff in Baltimore.
And a couple of people on the show. I know, like, I think it's Chris. Not Chris. What's the other? The girl in Marlowe's gang? Snoop. She was actually.
She got arrested.
Yeah, she did. Yeah.
Recently? I remember the story. Yeah, she actually killed someone.
But after, I think she was in trouble with the law before the show started, but then after the show, she got locked up for something.
Free Snoop.
Yeah.
Free Snoop.
Next tattoo.
That would blow Tom. That would blow Sean's mind right now.
Just rolling my sleeve, all tatted up.
He just had a tattoo. Just
like a devil figure.
It just says Attica on it. You're like, wow, I didn't see this one coming. No, I was going to mention, it's amusing, the whole thing with Nico's girlfriend. If you get the DVDs of The Wire, there's director commentary. And it's usually like the director and like a couple writers. The only time anyone from the show appears, Dominic West, McNulty, and then Michael K. Williams, Omar, appear on the episode when Nico's girlfriend takes her top off, and it's solely to talk about how great her rack is. I find that infinitely amusing. They don't show up anywhere else. No other episode has anyone else on it, and they're really just on there to be like, what a great rack on her. Oh, it was great. Seeing her
came out of nowhere.
But we're saying season 2 focuses on the docks, then season 3 is Hamsterdam.
Yeah.
Season 4 is the kids, and then season 5 is the newspapers. Yeah.
I think season 4 with the kids might be my least favorite.
I always loved season 4 just because
I thought
that
aspect of it. Like, the Cops and Robbers is still cool. The kids, like,
I'm almost the opposite there. That was, I think season 4...
He's a teacher. It's going to be one of the most important to him.
Yeah, it was relatable. I didn't like in season 4 that there was an episode or two where McNulty wasn't even in it at all, and there were a lot of other major characters that were out. And I wasn't a huge fan of the mayor race. Because it was kind of... Yeah, I was like, Carcetti's going to win. Like, how many like, I get it. He's white. People in Baltimore are black. He's still going to win. Yeah. Like, I didn't like that aspect of it, but I did like the school a lot, and I think that's the season that a lot of people point out as the best one. My personal favorite, season 3.
Season 3 is tough. It's a good season. The Hamsterdam stuff is like what I'll always point to. Is like, this is why this is like the greatest show in television, because it's still to this day. I'm like,
there's so much foreshadowing in that show. I mean, look what happened last year at Baltimore riots. Like, it's kind of odd how accurate that show was 10 years before stuff happened.
And it's like, it's still a topic you can sit down. Like, what if you did just legalize drugs in like a city block radius, and everywhere else you like, look, you can just deal it here, and you just kind of try to put as much outreach as you can in that area, and the rest of it gets to benefit from it. What would society be like? It's still something you can sit down and talk about.
Yeah, it's pretty much what Harrisburg is.
Yeah, Harrisburg's pretty rough and tumble, you know.
It's like the Hamsterdam of PA.
Yeah, the Hamsterdam of PA. I walk through the Hamsterdam of PA every day. I'm like, oh, please don't rob me. Oh! Like my little lunch bag. Oh! And then, so it's season 1, season 2, season 3, season 4. You say season 3 is your favorite.
Season 3 would be my favorite.
One's up there, but I think 2 edges it. I really like 2. I like the dark aspect.
I'd say probably 4 ends up being my favorite, but 2's a really close one on there. And I like 4 so much, though, because Presbo happens to be, like, probably end up being one of my favorite characters from the show. And that's like the season where he gets stuff together.
Yeah. And that was a surprise, because when he first came on, I was like, oh, he's the dumb guy who's just around because he knows somebody. Because he's married
Bolchek's, to
Bolchek's daughter. Yeah. Who's one of the police captains, whatever.
Yeah, and he's such a goober. There's a scene the first or the second episode where they're like, someone needs to go down to the towers because they think something's going up. And the group who goes is Presbo, Carver, and Herc.
Yeah, they're like, drinking.
They're drinking
at night inside. Like, let's go down the towers and show them who's boss. And that's how they show up.
And you're like, oh, this is the biggest squad of goobers they can find. Like, there's no way this is going to go well. And it just ends horribly. Like, Presbo gets like hit with like a boombox. I feel like, and they're like throwing cars at them or something. It's just awful. And at that time, I remember Mikey telling me, he's like, I'll spoil this for you, so I guess technical spoilers here, but he's like, two people from that group get their stuff together. One person doesn't. And if you maybe put a bet on it then, I'd be like, this Presbo guy never gets it together, because he just seemed like such a goober.
Hey, Cole Cock the Kid, like, obviously shouldn't do it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right, he does. That was he punches so many people.
He does. The one kid, a handlebar, like right in the eye. The kid lost the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, they took his gun and he had to be in the office.
But how him and Freeman got close, like.
Yeah.
He does say that he punches Belichick at some point later on in the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it was 3 or 4.
Season 2, he had some. Because that like gets down at the docks, and that's why he gets taken off the dock assignment for a little bit. And then season 3, obviously, with what happens. But, I guess we'll kind of go in, start it from the beginning, go through it, season 1.
Alright.
That's, like I said, it's the one season that doesn't have, like, a direct theme to it, but that's because they're kind of setting up the players at that point.
Definitely brings you in.
Yeah.
Introduces you to major characters.
Major crime unit is what, I guess, they go by. Right? Yeah. They have an official name, don't they?
Special? I don't want to say special crimes.
Special crimes. Special crimes. I thought they were a major crimes unit.
I think that's like they're getting folded into the force.
Oh, okay.
Like they're a special part of it.
They are brought in basically to be like this like special crime unit to solve this, you know, drug deal with Avon and Stringer Bell. And it's like a collection of like kind of oddballs and people without real assignments. Like it's a lot of his squad is made up. Lieutenant Daniels is the one who leads it, played by Lance Riddick, I think is his name.
Something like that, yeah.
Who's a ridiculously amazing actor who should be in a lot more. If you ever get the chance, he does like a Funnier Die video where it's like him owning a Toys R Us store. And it's so disturbing. It's just like him being like creepy and quiet and authoritative, just being like, you love selling toys at my store. Say it louder. And like creepily spying on women. It's like, it's so disturbing. But he's the commander, and then most of the people get folded into him. It's like, oh, you get Lester Freeman because he's this weirdo who doesn't do cases so well anymore, and he builds tiny doll furniture. Yeah. And you'll get Presbo, who's some like important officer son, but he's a complete nudnik. And you get these two freaking rejects over from like narcotics who just can't bungle a deal any harder. And then you get McNulty, this gigantic drunk asshole who no one likes. And I guess we'll throw you one competent employee. You get Kima, and that's it.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing.
She gets things.
And you get the whole Bunk and McNulty teamwork. Some of my favorite scenes are just those two together in the first and second season.
Like, maybe my favorite scene in the entire show, or at least, like, comedic one, is just where Bunk's completely hammered in the bar, and he's like just trying to talk to McNulty, and I think he like goes to answer a phone call or something like that, and he just turns over to this woman who has like enormous tits. He's like, "Those are them titters." Like, you can't make out anything he says. You just hear it ends with like "them titters."
He's definitely one of the funniest characters on the show.
Oh, he's so great.
By far.
The Bunk is classic.
The Bunk.
Yeah.
Wish I could have a nickname as cool as the Bunk, which is weird because it doesn't. It's not part of his name anywhere. I don't know.
What's his first name? I know the last name is Moreland.
William Moreland.
Is it William?
Yeah, William, I think.
Something like that. I literally had the same thing pop up like 3 episodes ago on the podcast, and I've forgotten already. But Bunk does not apply to either of his names, so I don't know where it comes from.
Yeah.
But he was one of the better characters in there. Always dug him. And then you get the criminal side of things, which is Avon, Barksdale, and Stringer Bell, who are like the two guys at the top. Avon's more of the street guy. Mm-hmm. Stringer's more of like the business side of things. And then that particular storyline also then includes D'Angelo Barksdale, who is Avon's
nephew.
That's nephew, right.
Yeah.
Who is just getting out of prison, is getting introduced back into the crime fold, and they have him managing the pit, that's right. Which is essentially like kind of like a small community. I don't know what you'd call them. I guess a ghetto, but I don't know if there's a specific term for that kind of, like, community.
Yeah, it wasn't a corner. It wasn't, like, the high-rises. It was, like, this little...
It was almost like an apartment complex.
Yeah, it was pretty much like a courtyard in an apartment complex. Yeah. With a couch that...
Just it was in the middle of the chessboard.
Yeah.
And he manages the kids who are there.
Which were three of... Bodie is one of my favorite characters on the show.
Bodie's great. Bodie, Poot. Poots there, and then Wallace.
Yeah, Wallace.
Michael B. Jordan, who was risen to fame before crumbling completely under the weight of that Fantastic Four bomb.
Yep.
The Bodie guy, the character, the actor, has, like, in that show, he's supposed to be, like, 14, 15. Mm-hmm. He was in Oz, like, 10 years before that, as a 14, 15-year-old. That dude hasn't changed, like, aged at all in, like, 30 years.
Good for him.
Like, black does not crack.
And that was, like, one of the bigger storylines that went on throughout that season is, like, D'Angelo trying to be essentially the commander to these kids because they're all nudniks, you know. Like, most of them are gullible. They'll buy into, like, stupid things. They have, like, really amateur ways of trying to protect it. And since their organization is being hunted by the police right now, like, it's a big thing for him to instruct them. But then he starts to kind of actually, like, care about the kids. He starts to actually, like, try to instruct them and lead them along, I guess, kind of trying to give themselves the mentorship he didn't really feel he got. And then ultimately, things start to kind of come crashing down for everybody towards the end of the season. A little bit. I guess at this point, we've kind of sold the show enough, so I'll just throw out the...
I got some spoilers.
I'll throw out the spoiler warning here. If you want to watch The Wire, you don't want anything to be spoiled for you, aside from the fact that Rawls is gay, which I've already told everybody. just know now to stop listening, go watch The Wire, you'll binge through it, and then come back and finish the rest of this podcast. So, there's your warning. So, as said, things start to kind of fall down.
So that Where's Wallace scene, when it is, I can't ever remember the actor's name. Like, once the actor becomes somebody, I think Omar, he's in, like, what other show? Boardwalk Empire?
Boardwalk Empire.
Like, I know his name's Chalk in that, but every time I'm like, oh, look at Omar over there. Like, you just become that character. Like,
See, it was the opposite for me, because I watched Boardwalk Empire first, and I was like, oh, it's Chalky White. But now, he'll be Omar to me now, because...
Like, Wallace, he's in Friday Night Lights, he's in any other movie, he's like, oh, look, good for Wallace out there.
Yeah. It's tough to even see him as, like, he's so young as Wallace in that, now, you know, he's like an adult, you know, he's a chiseled man, almost as good looking as Tommy over here. It's tough to, like, think back, like, wow, at one point he was just a kid in The Wire. And there's a point in time where I'm like, oh, man, like, I hope he gets to be friends with the other Wire actors. And I actually got a chance to see relief in that. There's a god-awful movie called That Awkward Moment with Zac Efron, Miles Teller, and Michael B. Jordan. It's like the entire premise is based around this idea of, like, if you're a guy seeing a girl, what's that awkward moment where things become, like, a real relationship? And it's basically just a story about a bunch of douches in New York who are just awful people. But at the end of the movie, there's, like, an extra credit scene, and they're, like, sitting around playing video games, and Michael B. Jordan's like, hey, is that Omar Little from The Wire on our couch playing Halo? And it, like, just turns, and for some reason, he's not in the movie at all, but just Michael K. Williams is there, like, hey, everybody! And they, like, they high-five, and I was just like, ah, good. I was so satisfied with that. So, if you ever see that awkward moment on TV, on HBO, watch the last, I guess, 2 minutes of the movie, catch the trailer of the credits, and get to see that moment. But no, things don't go well for Wallace.
Nah. What is it, the second or third episode when you meet Omar? No, it's
you meet him early on, and he definitely, like, kind of almost outlives the show. Like, if he's almost, like, one character is bigger than the show, like, if you were going to pick out, like, you know, like, the Homer Simpson of the show, you're like, oh, Omar's, like, the big guy from the show is almost more synonymous than the show itself. Mm-hmm. Because he has, you know, he's such a cool character, but he also was one of those, like, kind of breaking ground characters where you had a gay character on television who was not feminine in any way, shape, or form, really. Yeah. He always was making out with dudes who were super feminine, but he himself was just a complete badass. He was essentially not a drug dealer himself. He robs drug dealers. Like, that was his entire profession. Walk around the shotgun.
Black Robin Hood.
He reads and runs.
Well, I don't know if he ever noted giving money to the poor. He'd look out for them, but I think he just kept the money himself.
I think so.
And then he would sell the drugs he stole to the poor back.
Like, yeah. He definitely was perpetuating
the cycle. But he says himself, money doesn't have any owners, only spenders.
Yeah. So. He has so many good quotes from that show.
Indeed.
Gotta come at the king, you better not miss.
Better not miss.
Oh, we were just watching one earlier today where he has, like, that conversation with Brother Mazzone at the start of the penultimate season 3 episode. Where, like, the two of them, like, he's walking.
Standoff?
Yeah, he's, like, walking back to his house with his laundry and is like, you better
Drugs and stuff he stole. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't laundry.
Oh, no.
It wasn't folded up clothes.
It was like, Omar's whitey tighties.
I thought he was being serious when he said that. But he's just like, you know, pull it out slowly and drop it to the side. I'll pull it out slowly, but I ain't dropping anything.
Yeah.
Like, I see your favor of 45. Tonight I do.
This caliber at this business, if I miss, I don't miss. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
And I always keeps one in the chamber, in case you be pondering.
Somebody says, Brother Mazzone says, I have a question. He's like, Omar's listening.
Omar's listening. He's just such a great cadence to him, too. It's a character you're just like, oh, I wish you could have done this. Like, I wish you could just throw Omar into other shows for some reason. Like, somehow he's in Boardwalk Empire as well. It's like, I don't know why there's a shotgun in this guy who wears clothing really contrary to the times, but man, he just so many great quotes from him.
Every time I'm at the grocery store and see Honey Nut Cheerios, I think of when he has, like, everybody is out for him at the moment, and he leaves in his pajamas to go to, like, the corner store and buy Honey Nut Cheerios.
Stops to, like, light a cigarette.
Yeah, and they don't have any Honey Nuts, so he gets regular ones, and it's like,
oh, and how he's very, so disappointed. Like, this is the irritation in his eyes, basically, he's only have regular Cheerios.
I love when he, like, he just stops to light a cigarette, and his drugs fall from, the, like, the sky in front of him. And he gets back, and, like, he pours it on the, like, the table with his boyfriend at the time. And the boyfriend doesn't even, like, look at the drugs or anything else. He's like, what, the Honey Nut? And
oh, and then that's like the cold opening for the episode, so you go right into the theme song after that. Oh,
it's hard to pick your favorite cold opening, because there are so many good ones.
There's great, a lot of good ones. There's great comedic ones. We just watched the one with Brother Mazone and Omar opening it. That's a great one, because it ends in such a great moment, too, where you don't know what's going to happen. Like, we're just going to stand here and talk, like, Omar, listen. And then it's like, bah, 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 when you
walk through the fire. First season had the best theme song.
Yeah, season one, yeah. Season one was pretty good. I had to listen to season four or five again. Four sucks. As much as I like the kids, those kids can't sing. Nah, nah. But it'd probably go like seasons one, five, two, three, four.
Yeah, I'd have to listen to them again. Yeah. I just remember every season I was like, yeah, this isn't as good as season
one. No, none of them were as good as season one.
Was the Bunk and McNulty when they, like, they're at that murdered victim chick's house that D'Angelo said he did, but it really turned out to be, who was Cheese? Now, who actually did the murder? Who goes to the prison?
Weebay.
When they're looking around the fridge? Yeah.
The only word the entire scene. Opening? I think it was, if I'm not positive.
I feel like that was in the middle of the episode. I don't think it was a cold opening.
That might be my favorite.
That is a great
first 2 minute period. Motherfuck.
Oh, man.
Tommy saying fuck. It's so weird.
Dick Sean's mind being blown right now. He's just like, what if your dad hears, though?
He's a huge podcast fan, right?
My dad loves the podcast. Omar is just one of the best characters on the show, hands down. Definitely. Michael K. Williams plays him. If you ever get the chance to listen to interviews he does about the show, too, it's really interesting hearing about how he got it. I guess there was that point where, like, season one ended and season two started, and he was just like, sure ain't a lot of Omar scenes anymore. What's going on with it? A lot of white people getting roles here. But he's a big part of season one. He has maybe one of the best lines in the series in season two, where he has the scene in the courtroom where he's just like, you know, Levy, the judge, is just like, you're a parasite on society, amoral, stealing from the people who steal from us, just like you, man. It's the only time in the entire series where Levy's unnerved and unhinged. He's just like, what?
He's an important character, too, because without him, their whole operation goes away. I think Levy and the Greek. You take those guys out.
The Greek, a character who does not ever get caught, too. He's like one dude.
And who's, Levy, too.
Who's the guy right below the Greek who does all the talking?
Not Santiago, but it's something like that. Like Serioso or something like that. We just watched an episode with it.
Man, who induces him? Like, he wears a fedora hat. I remember the scene where it's McNulty and Bump and, like, in the car, and he comes out, and Bump, I think, is like, he's wearing a so-and-so jacket. And, like, McNulty's like, how the hell would a Baltimore police detective know anything about whatever kind of jacket was? Like, a black man like myself has to look nice, something like that.
But yeah, those two guys, there's a winner. Winners in the show.
They get away from it completely, because you basically get that thing where, like, oh, the FBI tipped them off. Mm-hmm. Like, someone in the FBI tipped the Greek off, and because of that, they're, like, minutes late from catching him, and he's in the airport and just gets off completely scot-free, and you're like, you never hear from him again. There's no, like, cameo in season five where it's like, the Greek's criminal empire brought to its knees.
Doesn't he come back at some point in season five?
I don't think he does.
It's so weird. End of season two, when they find, like, they bust in the Greek and they pull out his, like, rosary, and, like, Daniel's looked at it and they bag it up. You think, like, this is going to connect him to some other murders and the Greek's going to fall, but it doesn't get brought up again. Like, that's it. It's over.
Yeah.
No, you see the Greek, like, search for it at one point. It's like, no, whatever.
He's like, where's my
you carry it with you constantly.
Oh, I'm millionaire. I don't care.
I'm not even Greek.
But, he's one of the few characters. And then Levy's the other one, who not only does he not get off, he also enables Herc to have a happy ending. If there's one injustice, if there's one thing The Wire teaches you, is that injustice is going to exist in this world, and it's prevalent through it, and everything's cyclical. And nowhere is it more true than the fact that Herc doesn't, like, wind up in jail, or just, like, and like getting beat up on a constant. Like, he doesn't get the life of Bubbles through season 3 and 4 where someone just runs around beating him up every day.
That might be the most heartbreaking. Is when Bubbles calls him to come defend him from that drug dealer, like the drug addict. And the cop car just goes past him. I'm like, oh, Bubbles!
Yeah, like, you see, he's like calling Herc to come save him. Herc like looks at the numbers, like, no, I'm too busy accidentally diming out little Kevin. Like, God damn you, Herc! How did you do this?
My least favorite of the many kids in the show, Kevin. Nobody likes
Kevin. Little Kevin? Yeah, no.
The ponytail's the worst.
No, I liked him.
You're kidding me. He gets slapped around in front of, like, outside.
I thought his relationship with, he's the guy who made Amsterdam and then goes work for this.
Oh, so. Colvin.
Yeah. I actually enjoyed that story.
I kind of feel for him because, like, everyone wanted to be his dad, Weebay.
Randy.
Didn't have it in him to be Weebay, who was, like, a stone cold killer.
Is Randy the kid who gets beat up for being a snitch or whatever?
Yeah, Randy's the kid who gets beat up because I think he's a snitch.
Who's the one with the ponytail and stuff? Weebay's kid.
Yeah, it's Randy.
No, Randy is the guy that...
Randy's the one who goes to, like, the, like, foster kid. Yeah. The one who gets beat up and stuff.
Did you watch The Wire?
But he's the one who ends up with Colvin at the end.
No, he's not. He ends up just staying in foster. You see him.
Oh, like, that's right. He's the one who becomes Bodhi. Then who's the one I am thinking of? I do know the one you're thinking of now. Okay, now I'm remembering him. Yeah,
he sold the candy to kids in high school.
Weebay's kid's the one who ends up with Colvin. That's right. And then Michael's the other one.
Michael's the one who becomes, like, the new Omar.
Yeah.
The other one just becomes the new Bubbles. What was his name?
I don't know. The smelly kid.
Yeah, the stinky. I don't remember. The
one took showers at the school. Like, I'm not letting any kid in there.
I remember his name being very...
Tommy, would you... This situation pops up. The Harrisburg Wire. This kid's like, Mr. Coach Toon, I really need to get in to take the shower.
And you need to do his laundry, too. Yeah. Because apparently he can't handle that.
Yeah. You can't do it at Tommy's at Sean's house either. His dryer is still broken.
They're waiting for me to fix it until I get back to call the Sears to have them come out and do it. I don't know why. Like, how am I going to help? Do they need help moving the dryer? I don't get why they're waiting for me.
But, no, that was actually like one of the big points of the show is that everything's cyclical. Everything falls around the cycle. So by the end of the show, everybody has become somebody. Like, it's, you know, there's like comparisons. Michael's become the new Omar. Marlowe's become essentially the new Avon Barksdale and the new Stringer Bell in the same way. I guess it's good not to jump too far into the end of the show since we're still
we're on season one.
But season one, I think overall is good. I know a lot of people when I hear them starting The Wire, like, it's a little slow to start
because
you get introduced to so many characters, but it's one of those shows, and it's like, it's hard to even comprehend it because so many shows I feel like peak early on, but it is a show that I felt just kept getting better with time, or at least stayed at the same quality.
Yeah.
Season one ends. It's probably, I guess, it's not the only time they get like a real victory because they get a victory in all the seasons. Yeah, but essentially,
Stringer's still loose,
but they've essentially put Avon behind. They put the Kingpin itself behind bars.
Like 3 years for something like really small. Now he doesn't really get his comeuppance.
They don't get it, but like season two, they don't catch the Greek. They put an end to most of the Empire, but Sabaka's dead.
Yeah, all the white people crash.
It's back to that. And then season three, I mean, they technically win overall, but it's the huge thing that McNulty never gets to catch Stringer Bell because he gets killed beforehand. And easily one of the most, like, the toughest scenes, because you watched it live, and that was something I want to, like, clear in on. How hard is it? I mean, obviously, when someone like me and Tommy watch it, we can just click play and we get the next episode. Mm-hmm. How hard was it waiting that week after Stringer Bell died to see, like, what the fallout of that is?
Because there's still one more episode after that. Because right now, Avon's still out and loose.
Yeah,
Avon. So you should hope Avon's going to exact revenge. I mean, I was always a big Omar fan because everyone loves Omar more than Stringer Bell. Like, kind of went Omar, then, like, Stringer Bell, Avon, Wallace. But it was always, like, a big dip off.
I
like,
do
Omar
not
way
think that
there.
Many people liked Wallace.
I had to try to name people. Oh, okay. I just wanted to know the other one.
I was like, I don't think...
We had to do a top five. I had to think about it for a second.
A lot of people hated Wallace.
I don't get Wallace. Like, did you really think you could just come back from telling on the people you work for to go work for them again? And, like, it'd just be cool? You really thought that in your head that would just happen. And you're right.
This is the Jersey Toon Shine, like, striking out. He's just like, you ain't got any loyalty. You're snitching over here. You ain't coming back.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, he asked him if that's going to happen to him. Fuck Wallace. And when D'Angelo was yelling at String about Wallace, I feel like I was String. I'd be like, seriously, dude? Seriously, like, you didn't see that coming either? To me, it's just obvious. Especially in that lifestyle. They have to understand it's going to happen.
Something like, yeah, someone's going to break on that. Something's going to happen. It's rough.
Where's Wallace, String? Where's Wallace? And he just hangs up the phone, yelling for whatever reason. Yeah, I can't hear you anymore.
That'd be great. He just, like, walks away. Yeah,
they killed Michael Wallace? B. Jordan. He had time to go get jacked, and now he's a movie star.
Yeah,
so he just saved his career.
He starts.
He owes it to String a belt.
It's all, Bodie pulled the trigger. And
very true.
So.
It is right, Bodie.
Pooh pulled the trigger.
In that scene, though, Bodie shoots him once, and then Pooh takes the gun and shoots him twice. Like,
way more times.
I gotta, like, one-up you.
Yeah, Bodhi.
I shot our best friend twice. You only shot him once.
I hate Poot so much.
I'll be in the scene where Bodhi dies, and he's, like, telling him to, like, come with him.
Oh, that was a sad scene.
Yeah,
Bodhi
that's
dies.
A sad scene.
Oh, that's tough. Come at me! Yeah, I'm not walking Bodhi. Away from this!
Yeah. Like, I wanna, like, you're still a man if you run, dude. Just run.
And just, like, the moment of knowing, like, he was moments away from being able to talk to McNulty and really clear everything up. You're just like, oh no, not again! So many characters who are like, it's almost like that joke of like, oh, I'm one day from retirement and then getting killed. It's like, oh, tomorrow I'm gonna go into the police station and really just tell them everything. It's like, no! It always gets found out. Don't do this.
The first season is when Herc and Carter, like, have it out for Bodhi, and they're always getting into it. They drive him down to, like, Virginia or something, put him in that boys' facility, and he just walks out the front door.
Like, the
walks,
same day.
Back to Baltimore, and I'm like, my Bodhi's awesome.
He's always just cool, because, like, as all the pieces of the Avon Empire just crumble away, he's, like, the one constant piece.
Yeah,
and
he's,
like,
he's the one guy who, like, never went behind anybody's back.
Yeah, yeah, that loyalty in his own way. And even at the end, he doesn't, like, turn to them out of any, like, betrayal or anything like that. Like, he goes to the police, and he's like, there's nothing left for me at this point. Yeah.
Is it? Him and Slim Charles. Yeah. Like, the only people that keep going with the system.
Yeah, they try to keep going with it. I guess Poot's also in there as well.
Yeah. I think he's at the end. The very, very end, you see Poot.
I'm trying to remember what Poot does at the end.
I think he's just out in the corner. Just doing.
It's
the
like
same
him and Slim Charles just like, come on, man.
That's why it's a great show, because even Bodhi, I can think of great quotes. This he didn't get super a lot of scenes, but I remember one scene when they're at the movie theater, like, see, y'all go to the movies too.
Yeah.
How about that? Y'all go to the movies too.
Yep. He sees McNulty and Bunk with, like, their girlfriend.
No,
and
it was Presbo.
Or was it Presbo?
And, like, that one character, the cop that got shot, who has a super hot black chick.
Oh.
And that's a. When Carter and, what was it, Herc? Like, you have to pick one dude to bang, but then you can bang as many girls as you want. So, dude. At the movie theater, like, every day they come down, it's like, where's the shit? Who has the shit? Where can I get the shit? So y'all go to movies.
I'm trying to remember. It is, honestly, it's one of those shows, too, that's funnier than you give it credit for. Like, there's a lot of, like, great lines in it.
And it's so caught up in the storylines and what's happening, and then you forget that you laughed so much watching the episodes. Like, there's some really funny scenes.
I feel like The Wire has its own, like, there's the Star Wars people, there's the Star Trek people, and then there's, like, the core Wire people who are like, this is the best show on Earth, and you just say quotes all day, back and forth to each other, and talk about episodes.
I'm trying to remember what the one line, I know there's one where they're at, like, a meeting, it's like, what did Stringer used to call them, like his, he used to basically have, like, these board meetings or whatever.
Yeah, it was when he was in charge.
Yeah. And I forget what it is. Like, I think it's Poot who just keeps annoying him.
Yeah.
And he just says, asks some stupid question, and he just sees String like, motherfucker, if you say that again, like, he's, like, slapping the table off.
Yeah, it was, because you had to raise your hand, and I think Shamrock's like, the chair recognizes Poot, and he says, like, but we still selling shit, and String Bell's like, shut this thicker motherfucker up, like, he just slaps him. As they're taking minutes in the corner. Everyone's raising their hands.
I think it's later when they have when, like, all the heads get around. There's a dude taking meetings. He's like, you're taking
That's
meetings on a criminal and conspiracy.
What was that group called?
There was the coalition. The co-op.
They had a name before. Like, New Life Co-op.
Together?
Yeah.
I thought it was just called the co-op.
New
was
Day?
I think it was like it had a name, like New Day or New Life.
The New Day Co-op?
Something like that, maybe.
They did call it the co-op. Whenever it was referenced, we come to the co-op with all that. But
is this season one where they have the basketball game, West Side, East Side?
Yeah.
Avon's just killing Prop Joe for, like, wearing a suit. He's like, it's 85 degrees outside, you're dressed like you're Pat Riley, wearing a suit. He's like, dressed for the occasion. One of my favorite scenes, because they're playing, the cops are there watching, and, like, they're getting into the game, and all this money is on the line and stuff. It's like everybody forgets about the drugs.
And it comes with a big car chase at the end. And I just remember Avon driving by. I was like, no, no, no. I'm like, fuck yeah, you, Avon. That's why you're the best. You beat Stringer Bell. I don't care what anyone that says. Avon's better than Stringer Bell.
I'm not a, what does he say? I'm not a suit and tie wearing guy. I guess I'm just a gangster. Such a good quote right there.
So many. And I'm shocked that we brought up basketball without immediately going into somebody to check Tommy. Which is a joke that has persisted on this family for...
Lucy, in your family, I don't feel like my family brings it up. Do your family bring it up?
Anytime you're brought up, that's brought up.
Oh, synonymous with check Tommy?
Like when John and I think about you, we think about that.
I don't know how to take that, to be honest with you.
Essentially, the story just went, we were playing basketball. It must have been... Was John there with us?
John was there.
It must have been 3-on-3 then. Who was there? Who was there? Scott's...
It was 2-on-2. Me, you...
It must have been 3. No,
we were playing like 33 or just like shooting around. I don't know.
Yeah,
there it was. All right, so
we weren't very old. Like I don't think I was more than 10, maybe.
No, we're definitely older.
No, you guys were older than that.
Yeah, Tommy would have been like 7.
I can't remember if it was for a wedding or for baptism or whatever.
I feel like it was baptism.
It was a baptism.
Yeah, I can't think of the aspect. So what's the earliest wedding? Would be Scott, right?
Yeah, the earliest wedding wasn't at Scott's wedding.
Yeah,
but it was myself, Mikey, Sean, Tommy, and then our cousin John, your brother. We were playing basketball, and to just be blunt, my brother and I are not very athletic gifted in any way, shape, or form. No, we didn't have a dad to teach us how to play basketball, so we were kind of picking it up as we go along, just like, don't score! And we didn't know what to do, and Sean's just sitting there like, oh, this is ridiculous. Somebody check Tommy! And just immediately following that, just shoulder tackles Tommy to the ground. Having to be at least like a good foot and a half taller than Tommy at the time. Probably like 80 pounds.
I was a short little fat kid for quite a long time.
And he just pile drives you to the ground and then just takes the ball and probably dunked with it or something like that. And that just became the synonymous joke. Yep. It's like Sean's anger reaching that boiling point. Like somebody just checked Tommy and just like slammed you into a wall.
How do you remember this story? Because I remember saying somebody checked Tommy. I remember getting the ball. I don't remember how it happened. I remember getting
that's
the ball.
Like 10 seconds. I'm sure I scored. It's gone. I remember we went to play basketball and that. And I remember it happened when we played like 500 too. Like I was just super competitive as a child. Like I'm still really competitive. And I remember like playing and like actually scoring, and you guys were just wanting to like mess around, and I actually wanted to like play, and you guys just got tired of me like being the short little kid going super hard. So I remember you taking me out. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that became what you are today.
I think I grabbed the basketball and like walked back to Scott's house or something.
Yeah, it's just like game's done.
Done it.
Sean's mean.
Start working out.
I like these jersey colors.
I'm to start working out so I can beat him up one day. Because now the joke is...
I probably like did a push-up as I was rising from the ground.
And I really like this. I was like, this is actually not so bad.
And that's the way the jokes become now is whatever. It's like, Sean's like, somebody check Tommy. Check who? And you just slam him into a wall. You just like tombstone him into the concrete or something like that. I forget where we were at with the wire. Oh, the basketball game. The wire being a funny game. Yeah, there's so many good... Because even though people don't love the first season, there's so many great episodes from it. I just said the scene with them in the refrigerator, and they're just an entire scene existing in Fox. Fuck, fuckity, fuck, fuck. Yeah, like the basketball game, which I think is our first introduction to Prop Joe.
Yeah.
He becomes a bigger character as it goes on.
You kind of get the whole West Side, East Side things.
There's nothing like that in Harrisburg. I know it's such a hard thing to comprehend in this city where you're just like, there is no like.
Yeah, like you don't hear people saying like uptown, downtown. You
know? Yeah, it's just like.
Harrisburg's so small.
I'm a suburb out of Camden, so obviously I don't deal with any of that. I think Camden's kind of like that. It's kind of quartered off. Like, there's a whole lot. I'm going to start naming places we don't even fucking know, but.
Don't do it. I mean, it gives you more legitimate to see to the people.
Like, there's like, I don't know, it's like broken off. Like, Pollock, it used to be like a Pollock town. There isn't any more poles there. Mm. And then there's like. North Side, there's Fairview, there's like different aspects.
So I don't know. Neighborhoods?
Yeah, it's not so much like beef, I guess.
Yeah.
As far as I mean, I'm not in the gang loops that I might be missing. I missed the last meeting, I was here for the podcast.
I'm the chairhead, which is going to be really rough.
Yeah. I think in season one, who does Daniels end up marrying?
Or the attorney chick. What's her name? McDoldy's with.
Because the first season, it's like her and McNulty, like the love story.
Love story. It's McNulty showing up pissed after crashing his car four times.
After 240s of Jameson and
Rhonda is her first name. Her last name, I got it.
Yeah, Rhonda, I can't remember her last name. But
that was like their straight female in character one, or in season one, because who's the detective?
Kima.
Yeah.
She's a lesbian character. Yeah. We've always joked like it's been like an HBO required mandate to just have a gay character in every series. Yeah, no matter how, it's like, oh, Jimmy's wife in Boardwalk Empire happened to be gay in the worst storyline of the entire show that no one gave a crap about all two seasons it existed.
I actually hated every female character on that show. There was Margaret Schroeder was annoying.
Margaret was the worst character on Boardwalk.
The one with DEA? No. Who was the chick they called Daddy, everyone. She used to be McNulty's girl. Not McNulty. Nucky's girl.
I'm so confused.
She used to be Nucky's girl. And then I know Van Aldrin, whatever her name was.
I know the one you're the show girl. Yeah. Rose or Lacey or something like that.
It's like a perfect example why I would prefer The Wire to Boardwalk Empire. Because there were characters on Boardwalk Empire I didn't like, and there were episodes I didn't like.
Yeah, they're great episodes.
There's no Wire episodes.
On The Wire, I can't think of a character who I didn't like or an episode I didn't like.
Yeah. And even then, there's like characters like, I don't care much for this, but you're usually side characters. Like, I was never a huge Beatty fan, but like, I'm like, I could dig with Beatty.
Every time I saw her, she was on The Office.
She was the chick on The Office.
Yeah. And that's what I always thought.
I'll be completely honest, I completely bullshit you at that point. I hadn't watched The Office. When you're like, that's a chick from The Office. I was like, nah, that's not Sean. You're stupid.
There's a great.
Every time I saw her, that's what I thought of it. I couldn't picture her as a detective. But
you've watched The Office? Did you watch
it? That's my favorite. Yeah, that's my favorite like comedy show.
Remember the episode where Michael Scott, Dwight, and Brian, whatever? Like, Brian's like now the upper boss, and they go to New York and party, and he's obviously doing coke constantly.
Ryan?
Yeah, Ryan. And he goes to the bathroom, comes back, he's all sweaty and whatnot, and Michael Scott and him like are sitting on the bed, and Ryan's like, what would you say if my friend had a coke problem? And Michael Scott's like, I'll tell him we're here, we want to get him help, then I'll make him wear a wire, and then I'll get to his coke dealer, then get up to his boss, and I just cuts to this Michael Scott, like, talking strictly to the camera, like, off-screen. Like, I've been watching The Wire a lot lately. I haven't understood a word of it, though. It's awesome.
I remember that episode, but when I was watching The Office, I'd never seen The Wire, so I never made that connection.
Oh, so good.
That is great. I just got reminded of one of my favorite lines from the show, though, reference to when Herc and Carp are really nailing down on Bodhi in the first season. They have him like in the interrogation room, and they're trying to play good cop, bad cop with him, and he can easily see through it. And he just, like, I forget what he says, but he just provokes Carver, and Carver just starts wailing the fuck out of him, and it just cuts away to the outside, and the last line you hear is like, you're supposed to be the good cop, you dumb motherfucker!
I do remember that scene. Like, oh, you grew up hard too, did you? Did you grow up hard? You just suck my dick. He's
like, you son of a bitch. You're supposed to be the good cop, you dumb motherfucker. That's maybe my favorite line for the show, because the first time I saw it, it was like a film where I had to like pause and just start like stop laughing first. But the first season's good. Second season, though, is where a lot of people are like, the show, it's divisive, because I know some people hate the second season because there's no black characters really in it. Like, all the black characters have their plots moved to, like, B-story, because everything revolves around Frank Sabaka and those characters.
Yeah.
But it's such a great season, I feel like. The characters in it, Frank Sabaka, maybe one of my favorite characters in the show. It's, like, tough to really nail it down.
For me. Nick Sabaka's definitely up there for me.
Really?
And Ziggy. Yeah, I don't know. Hey, man, you really got a duck with his gold collar chain.
Here's the thing. I see a lot of our family in the Sabaka storyline. More on their side, but I always saw Sean as being, like, the Nick character, and then, of course, then that makes me Ziggy, and I'm like, I want to be Ziggy. Look at this kid. He's a nudnik.
Like, yeah, Ziggy's hilarious. And to start off, you're like, oh, he's a dumb guy, but, like, he has some really funny scenes, like... But I'd like.
And he had a huge dick. A huge dick. Out of nowhere.
Good for him.
Yeah.
He bought a. What did he buy? A duck or a chicken that he takes?
Yeah, it was a duck.
Duck. Yeah, every scene with the duck in the bar, I just thought was hilarious. Like, it's so
dumb. I hate how, like, the whole bar turned on them after the duck died from drinking too much. Yeah, but during the thing, they were all for it.
Yeah, they're all buying cheering the duck shots. And then the duck dies of alcohol poisoning.
Like, laying
on the pool table. It's all Ziggy's fault.
Yeah. Ziggy, that asshole. You were the ones who gave him the beer.
I like Nico, though. I thought, like, Nico had his head straight and was a big part of making that season enjoyable.
I think the only thing I didn't like about Nico, I thought he was one of the few times there was, like, an actor on the show who I didn't care for. I wasn't crazy about Nico's acting in it. But otherwise, I guess I didn't have a problem with him per se. Because he is kind of cool. He has, like, characters getting, like, he's trying to keep shit together.
Yeah.
And Sabat, Frank's just, like, one of the best. Like, spoilers to what happens, but he dies in the end of the season. But, like, I love that he goes in essentially knowing he's going to die. And, like, you know, the episode ends with him just, like, meeting them. And you don't get to know what happens.
Yeah, walking down the dock, yeah.
The cold opening next episode begins, like, they're pulling his body up, but then they just have, like, this line where they're just, like, multiple defense wounds on his hands and legs, look like there was a real fight to him, he didn't go down, like, you know, like a chump, be like, oh, that's...
Yeah,
that's
one of those characters where it's better you don't see it, because when he's walking down the pier, it's the Greek and the guy whose name I can't remember.
Sergio or Sergetto or something.
And the Greek's like, oh, it's not gonna work, and that's like...
Yeah, they get the text message from the FBI agent. That's, like, the moment, because I think he looks at that, and that's when, like, oh, shit, Frank, don't just turn around, buddy.
Oh, that's right. Like, he gets a text message. He's like, oh, that's right. He goes down trying to think he can work something out.
Yeah. Because they still want the docs to keep moving, so...
Yeah. Because Ziggy kills whoever he breaks.
He breaks into the
the store that... Yeah, the pawn shop, and kills the owner there.
And shoots the kid that worked there, too.
Yeah. That's right, yeah, and he kills basically like an innocent kid.
And that, yeah, and then turns himself in.
Like, right away.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Ziggy.
Yeah.
You can't even like a Ziggy.
Right, yeah. Right away.
That's why I don't want to beat Ziggy. I can't let myself beat the Ziggy. Yeah. But it's such a great season.
So you would turn yourself in, I feel.
Yeah. Well, I'm honorable.
And they do involve the police in that season with McNulty, and he breaks into the whorehouse.
Oh, that's an awesome scene.
Amazing scene.
He's trying to write it up afterwards and like, explaining why he's like halfway into some girl.
Well, no, there's two. He's like having a threesome. Because the lady lines him up and she's like, you know, which one do you want? He's like, can I take more than one? He's like, hey.
And he's just reimbursing it later. Yeah, like, exactly. Writing it off.
Because remember, the entire time I take off the clothes, he's trying to say the call word. Like, it was like, Alakazam. Oh, my shirt's really tight, right? Alakazam.
And what does the call in for is when you get that moment where you're like, oh, this guy's actually British. He's supposed to be like a British guy. Like, oh, I do believe I'm going to be over there for a brief spell. I wonder if there's any attractive women at your bar. And they're just like, how the hell did you pull that out? It's like, I don't know how I pulled that one out. You want to fight about it? Like, oh, you're one of those great British actors who can come over here and do American accents way better than we can. It's unfair. But, honestly, it also had to be one of the seasons with the best quotes from it, too. Sabaka just has great ones. The one I always think of is where it's basically like his penultimate scene where he's talking. I don't remember if it's... I guess it must be to his other guys, but he's just like, we used to do shit in this country. We used to build shit.
His friend is like a... somebody comes into his... Nah, not Horseface. Somebody he knows who's, like, higher up than him and has some type of connections, but he's friends with, comes into his office.
Yeah, that's it.
And he kind of had turned his back on Sabaka or something, and then he does it.
The one I'm thinking of is, like, the attorney comes up to get more money to bribe more people, and he was saying, like, Sabaka was making fun of him, like, how, like, man, I'm paying your kids, you know, tuition. And the lawyer's like, well, my grandfather worked hard, so my dad went to high school. My dad worked hard, so I would finish, like, the first one to finish college, and yada yada. And, like, Sabaka, like, doesn't even get taken back by it, because it was a story about, I think, the grandfather, like, sharpened knives, and his leg got shortened from that deal. And he's like, I'm real sad, I won't be able to get my knife shortened from so-and-so and sons, but I think it's a cold day in hell, there's so much, like, work for Sabaka's on the waterfront. Like, you get, like, think Sabaka had the greatest. And I love when the Bunk and Freeman go down there to, like, give, like, warrants out. It's like, Frank Reagan union busting Reagan, and like, you don't even need to see our books anymore, they're free to anyone. Oh, it's awesome. And like, at the end of it, like, we're this close to getting one of the dock people to say that they think the docks are near water. Like, that's the best they got out of it.
And it is a kind of cool ending that essentially the docks are placed in a situation where they're like, you have to change the way you're being ruled or it'll become under the municipality. And the dock workers, you know, this is after they just found out Sabaka's dead. They just unionize to re-elect the dead Frank Sabatka and just make him the commissioner again, and essentially they just get brought out and taken under. But it's a very cool, like, moment with how they have that loyalty to him, like a hard-working kind of guy. Very admirable in his ways, despite the fact he is a criminal. It is kind of glamorizing crime in a way, but just, like, it is that blue-collar kind of attitude that you don't see a lot of anymore.
But it wasn't, like, for him. Like, his criminal activity was to build the union. He didn't have the money for himself. It all went straight to bribes.
Yeah.
And I feel like Nick Sabaka, like, he would be totally not a criminal if there was more jobs open. He would have just stayed doing whatever he was doing on the docks. His drugs were just there.
Yeah. I would love when Frank would tell someone, like, go to the bar and say, oh, I've had a rough day. Or I forget what he told him to say. And the bartenders, that old lady, I don't remember her name at all, but would, like, slide him a beer and, like, $100 or whatever.
That's
That is pretty cool. And there's another scene he has with Nico's dad. Mm-hmm. That they have, like, a conversation in the bar where the two of them kind of argue it out, and the dad's kind of trying to talk to him, like, about what he's doing, like, you know, knowing that he's into the illegal side of things. Yeah. They have a really good conversation there. I can't remember any specific quotes from it, but just a lot of great scenes from that season. And also, I remember, like, I think it was maybe the first episode they show it in, you see the dock workers going into the bar at, like, the first shift in the morning, and all of them get a beer that they crack an egg into.
Yeah,
so it's supposed to be a hangover cure. I did that once. It's not worth it at all. It's awful. It is just the worst taste, because you go to drink the beer and the egg is too heavy, so it just sits at the bottom until you finish the beer, and then you just get one lump of egg go down at the very end, and it just sits there in your stomach. It was a terrible, terrible decision. Don't recommend it.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
I took a lot of cues from The Wire, but that wasn't one of them.
You sure? Next time you get a hangover, wake up, crack an egg into beer. I know you don't even like beer, but crack an egg in one, down it, let me know how you feel. Shoot me one of those, you know, you're just waking up, so it'll be like a 3 p.m. text. And
early day? Why am I here so early? Yeah. That's something to do later? I don't want to start drinking that early.
Season 2 really good, and then season 3... That's where I think the arguments start to come in with, like, best season or why the show has really turned around. Because the entire thing is, like, the main premise is Hamsterdam. We get introduced to Bunny Colvin, who's, like, the other big detective and captain in the show. And he basically creates this idea. He wants police work to get back to where it used to be. So he's like, let's take so many of our guys off from having to beat down on corners. And let's legalize drugs in, like, the section. Essentially, everyone who's in there, all the houses are either vacant, or let's just move the people who are in them out of there, legalize drugs. Everywhere else, it's still just as hardly enforced, but because people are going to want to avoid having to get beat down, the cops are all just going to congregate there, and we essentially clean up 90% of this area while damning the 10% of the rest of it. And that becomes the crux of the whole season, because he does this without asking permission, and the governor gets involved, or not the governor, the mayor gets involved. And then, you know, the police have to start dealing with it, and it becomes this kind of moral quandary where you're seeing the positives and negatives of it. Everyone starts getting involved in it. And then the B story is that, you know, our major crimes unit, special crimes unit, whatever it is, they're now going after Stringer Bell and the newly released Avon Barksdale and trying to bring them down. And that's
when they start using the phones, right?
Yeah, that's where they start really, like, using the burners and everything like that. It's a very cool season. We get introduced to Cuddy, the boxer.
Yeah.
Another good, solid character to the show.
I loved Cuddy at the start, and then the more that he was in it, I was like, alright, he really just wants the bangs of his mom's. Like, he opened up that gym, and you're like, oh, he's a great guy. He's being nice to all his kids.
Great.
And then it's like, every like season, he's just talking to a new kid's mom. And
that is, like, the start to become the joke for his character.
Yeah.
Like,
hey,
coach, why did you stop coming around? Because you keep banging all their moms!
He turned him like a real, like, serious character who you love. Because he has the whole scene where he's like, my heart's not in the game anymore, none of it. Like,
such
he can't go back to it.
I was so excited for him. Like, his backstory while in jail with Avon was like, he shot someone, called the cops, like, hey, I shot this motherfucker, come get me, and just hung up and waited around. I'm like, I can't wait for this guy to get out
there.
He seems
like the most trustworthy guy. He, like, hops in the car, and they give him a gun, and he's like, what is this? The game changed. He's like, the game didn't change, just got more fierce. And you're, like, ready for him to go, and then...
It's him and Weebay, and the two, like, the fuck-ups of the group, and they're planning a drive-by. And the way they're planning is, like, you have to come from this way. And they're like, why would we come back that way? Because that'd be, like, out of our way. Like, you don't want your driver to be the one, like... If enemy fire is coming at us, you don't want him to be able to hit first. And, like, they mess up, and it still goes down, and that's when you find, like, he can't get himself the coolest trigger and kill, like, one guy and can't do it. But, like, that scene, like, he was so cool. He could have done so much stuff. I was so excited. Avon needs another strong soldier.
Man,
he's losing him left and right.
And then I liked him at first when he, like, built the gym and stuff, and then he just...
I wrote him off after that. I wrote him off. I'm like, you're out of the group. You're dead to me.
Don't worry. You'll show up in another show, and I'm sure you won't be a major wank in that either.
Yeah.
10 days.
Another character I feel like we haven't mentioned much, but plays a big role in season 3 is Bubbles.
He plays every episode.
He's in every season.
Yeah, he's in every season. I feel like season 3 is where he kind of... Because he's, like, in Hamsterdam, and he's, like, the kind of the... connect there.
Like the eyes on the ground of people actually using Amsterdam as it is. Bubbles is tough because he's that slow burn character where he's like a fuck up in season one, but he starts to kind of get things together, then just crumbles apart in like seasons two and just has like slow, like, I don't want to call them rises into valleys because he goes up just a little bit just to like just plummet from there and just keeps falling lower.
Is it season three or four where the kitty's with
four? Sherrod. Yeah,
that is heartbreaking when he's in that interrogation room, like trying to kill himself. Like, it was, oh man,
yeah,
feel for him.
Yeah,
and then season five is all about like him, like his entire plot is he's trying to be rehabilitated, and that's like the one kind of cool. Because, again, the end of the series is very, cyclical. So everything kind of like, oh, this really didn't get solved. Like, someone else has just filled in this role. But it's like the one thing you get to see is like, oh, Bubbles actually did get it together and his family is going to accept it back into it. Like, oh, that's the one little optimistic thing.
Because the next scene, it's a smelly kid shooting up heroin. Like, it's not a race.
What is that? I think it's like Carter, season one. He's like, this isn't war. War's end.
Yeah.
That's good for
his name. There's so many great lines. This ain't war. We just an occupied enemy territory.
Yeah.
Beginning of the episode, I tried so hard because now they show you the quote. I'm like, I'm going to remember that quote. I'm going to shout it out when it happens. I never remember when it happened.
It never happened. I always show it.
I think the only one I can ever get is, you know, when you come at the king, you better not miss from Omar. Just because that's such a great like scene. But there are a lot of ones like that. We just watched one earlier today where... Yeah, Stringer has the line where he's like, "We ain't got a dream anymore, man."
Cause it's, we got it.
We have all this. We got it. We got real estate.
Is that when they're out on the little balcony with Avon? That scene.
It's really rough because it's after you know both of them betrayed each other and they have to.
They're like in the club before and they're both just like kind of eyeing each other up and you know something's coming, but
and like it starts off it starts off with the two of them kind of like being friends with each other, being like, yo, you remember when you tried to steal a badminton set? Was you stealing a badminton? You don't even have a yard. Like, why are you having that? You run, like, they're just having friends, like,
punch yourself in the chest while you run.
And then like they just like start to slowly calm down, and like he has like the one line, he's like, so what time you going out tomorrow? Like, I don't know, like 12? Why, you need me to do something? Like, nah, just figuring out what you're up to. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, that's heartbreaking.
And who's the character who Stringer's talking to, who takes his money?
Clay Davis is the one who takes his money.
One of the best lines of the show, and it's just one word, but,
I feel like that's the only thing that guy should do from now on. Like, I think anything, he's almost like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like, anything else he appears in, I'll Be Back has to pop up. For some reason, when everything else he's in, he just has to be like, she!
He has one that's about, like, a golden goose egg or something. I don't know, but,
he's in 25th Hour. It's like a Spike movie with Aaron Norton. He's a detective in it. And there's a part where Aaron Norton is like a drug dealer that's going away. This is like, he has one day of freedom. So he's like, I don't remember what the scene was exactly, but he definitely does like the, she, you got one day left, and that's it. Like, oh, he said it, guys.
If I was a casting director and I knew I was getting that guy in a role, I would immediately be like, I'm writing a long she somewhere in here. I don't care if it's a PG movie, we're throwing it in here. Another cool cameo of a wire actor. Have you ever seen Horrible Bosses?
Yeah.
Like, at the very, like, towards the end, they get arrested, and the two cops that arrest them, one's Ron White, the other one's Bunk. And I was always like, man, I need that show to happen after this, Bunk and Ron White as cops. But no, there's so many great scenes in season three. Bunny Colvin also is, like, the other big character introduced, and he kind of stays persistent throughout it. He's most prevalent in season three. He becomes more sporadic as it goes on, because ultimately, I think, at the end of season three, he gets fired.
Yeah.
Or they force him to retire. I don't know if he gets fired outright. But he has great quotes, and one of the ones I always remember, because he had this big thing he preached about, like, real police work, and he, like, told a story about the greatest invention in police work was the brown bag, because it was something simple. We used to have to arrest anybody out there who was ever drinking something, but then we put a bottle in a brown bag, and suddenly people could go about their business and get back to real police work. And there was he has the line where it's just like, we're not serving the public anymore, we're just an occupied territory. And he, you know, it's one of those lines, like, it kind of sticks with you and makes you think a little bit. Because he was the driving force that changed Carver from being, like, a complete, just chronic screw-up into being, like, one of the most admirable characters by the end of the series.
Yeah.
That driving force behind it.
doesn't end well for Carver, I think, in that season. Because isn't that when the kids season? Where the
season four is the kids. Season three ends where, I guess, I forget who takes over for Colvin at the end of that. Because he doesn't get promoted right away. Like, the end of the series, he gets basically promoted into Daniel's position.
Yeah.
But season...
I get all the, like, the characters' names I struggle with the most are all the, like, police chiefs and commanders.
Were you asking who takes over for Bunny?
Yeah.
It was his lieutenant, the white guy. The one that usually ran the meetings and whatnot.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, season three doesn't end too bad for him. Season four is where it gets rough for him. And it's a shame, because that's the season he starts off and he gets, like, you can see, like, right from the onset, he's got it now. Because he has, like, a moment where he's, like, walking down the street and he sees Bodhi and all those guys. And he just has, like, a friendly conversation with them. And you go back, you're like, those are the guys who at the start of season one's like, you're supposed to be the good cop, motherfucker, and you're just, like, punching kids.
Yeah. You definitely get to see, I think The Wire does a great job showing, like, you get negotiated, like, or you only get a higher job based on what you have to negotiate with. Like, all the, even between, like, Cedric and, who does he have? Somebody, like, knows something about him when he was a cop. Who's the other?
It was the other commissioner that was running it. They never say it. They always imply, like, he did something back in the 90s when he ran, like,
they never
narcos.
Say,
they don't say what it is, what happened. He just calls it the bad old days. You had to assume maybe money came up missing or something like that.
Yeah, you had to assume he was... I think the thing is that maybe it was smuggling, because that was the thing in season one, is that Herc and Carver get caught trying to steal something. Yeah. He has, like, a real lashing out at them. So you have to presume it was probably something along those lines.
Major Rawls, I think, right?
Rawls was the white guy.
Rawls was the white guy.
One who turns out to be gay. I'm trying to remember, who's the fat guy with him? The one who, like, always, like, shits on McNulty, like that.
Oh, the lieutenant in the homicide group?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what his name is.
I just remember him eating and looking at porn. All at the same time. Yeah. Like, who does both at the same time?
He had a thing where, like, just one time McNulty was in his room and the fat guy just, like, comes to the door and pulls his pants down. It's like, yahoo, McNulty! And it, like, after that happened, that just became a thing in our house. Whenever I'd go to an open door where Mikey was, just pull down the pants and, yahoo, McMikey! But hey, he was a good character.
You didn't start doing that, Tom?
No, I didn't start doing that.
Well, no.
I still live by myself, so no one to really do that to.
It's not funny when he does it either. You're just a tranche. You're like, wow, that's some great glute action he's got going on there.
He must squat.
Oh, wow, he must do deadlifts like nobody's business. season three, overall, one of the better seasons. I think it's Mikey's favorite. It's a tough one.
It's my favorite, season three, just because I loved Avon and Stringer so much.
Yeah.
That's the other thing we haven't mentioned. That's the introduction of Marlowe's gang, too. Because that's the big thing, is that it's a war. While they're trying to hunt down Stringer and Avon, they're the West Side?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the towers come crashing down.
They're basically having to deal with the fact that Marlowe Stanfield is this new up-and-coming drug dealer, and his gang is just slowly gaining more and more power and territory, and it's just become an all-out war between Marlowe's crew and Avon's crew.
And when he's first introduced, you think that he's just, like, another
Avon's
guy.
Avon's gonna wipe him out. No
trouble. Yeah, no problem. Just like he's wiped out anyone else, and Marlowe's just so reckless. Like, he has one conversation, and, like, you know how many dead kids are in the cemetery who wanted to be the king for a day? And Marlowe's like, all that matters is that they wore the crown. Like, that's all he cares about, is just wearing the crown, even if it's for a day or a week.
We were talking about it earlier, there's that scene in the fourth season. Like, it's after, essentially the end of season.
It's D'Angelo dying. Like, that happened, what, season three, right?
D'Angelo?
Why is in jail?
Yeah, D'Angelo dying.
That's like, two.
Stringer going behind it.
Like, yeah, that is in two. A little bit of season two is like Avon in jail, still being like the king, even though he's
eating fried chicken that's piping hot somehow, playing video games.
Xbox.
Who's the guy with the fish?
Weebay. I love Weebay.
He took over. Some murders ended. No, wait, you weren't even in the country when this happened.
He's like, man, they messed with my fish, man. You don't understand. He's like crying in jail.
Right before he like tries to make a run for it to Philly, and D'Angelo is like swearing up and down he's about to get murdered, and it's like Weebay like pulls up in his truck, like, D'Angelo, get in the car, and like, where are we going? Let's get in the car.
It's super awkward. Like, oh god, like he's terrified. He's like, just walk inside the house.
Which is kind of like, Weebay could have been like, oh, can you mind feeding my fish? Yeah. Like, while we're in the car, just bringing it up.
Takes
like,
him down to the basement.
Because D'Angelo brings that multiple times. Like, why are we here, Weebay? Why are we here, Weebay? Because
like,
let's get in the house.
You'll see. You know, like, lights up. yo, man, can you feed my fish? And it's like wall-to-wall fish tanks.
With
like
aquariums.
It's like being inside a PetSmart. It's like this dude just loves fish.
He spent his entire cut of the money on fish.
No, and he's great, too. He's also like one of the... I think he's the only member of the Avon crew who shows up in all five seasons.
Yeah.
Because there's season four, you don't see Avon, and obviously most of the other characters are basically dead through seasons four and five.
When does Avon sell the like the drug information to Marlo? You see, it's a scene with Marlo and Avon while Avon's in jail.
That's season five. Season five is when Marlo comes into prison to talk to him. And he's just... Essentially, he's just like, yeah, I'll tell you. Because fuck them East Side niggas. Like,
we still had to pay him like $1 million or something ridiculous.
And it's still like the next episode Prop Joe dies. You're like, it wasn't really... There wasn't a big war that went on here.
Fucking cheese. I'm glad he got it at the end. We're skipping before, right?
Cheese. No, we skipped over cheese. Like, cheese is season two. Method Man plays him and then like dies in the same season. It's great.
No,
like,
cheese makes
it very... Oh, that's right. He does come back. Fuck cheese. You're right.
You should have watched more Wire before they had this podcast. No,
I'm forgetting little things here and there. Yeah, cheese was annoying.
I just imagine Mikey that's pounding the steering wheel. Like, no! He was always there!
Cheese was there all along!
My favorite character.
That is true. Mikey will be listening to this, so if you want to pepper in little clues and jokes for Mikey, feel free.
I'll see what I can do. Yeah. I will say that in season two, Nico always reminded me of Mikey. And maybe it was just the appearance. Maybe it was just the giant nose. And Mikey's never had a girlfriend nearly as attractive as Nico's girl, but...
No, Mikey's current girlfriend isn't listening to this. Like, how? You said
me Nico's girlfriend.
I've never met her, so, you know...
Well, he doesn't want you to, because you know he won't take a chance afterwards.
Yeah, you know, after what he did at the movie theater to me, so...
What did you do? He ruined your girlfriend relationship. Yeah.
Mikey, first time I meet your girlfriend, it's going to be the most awkward situation of your life.
Yeah, you're just going to be like, hey, man, it's great to see you. You should marry him from now on. Anyway, later.
I'm just going to be like, yeah, nice to meet you. Mikey was telling me he was going to propose, like, next week, and then just walk away.
I like to think that what you do is you do, like, a flex, and you just walk out of the room, and she's sitting on your bicep as you're walking out now. Like, he's just like, bye!
I'll just start taking my clothes off as soon as I meet it. Let's go from there.
Well, you have to watch out. Mikey might be pretty excited about that, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, ooh, look at those abs. Yeah. You can bounce a quarter off that butt.
Man, you got some fanboys from the Larios. They love you, dude. Like, oh, you're in shape. You're good for you. Like, I don't think that right looking guy, I guess. Jesus.
I wish there was more to say about Sean, except he wakes up late and screams at movies. Although, John does that, too. Did John ever tell you when we went to go see Elysium in theaters? I went to go see it with him. And, like, do you ever see Elysium?
No.
All right, well, it's not a scary movie. It's like a regular... It's made by the same guy who did District 9. So
okay.
I saw that. It's like a sci-fi movie that's meant to have a political message. And just in it at one point, like... And I think it's like the female lead in the movie is trying to run away from the bad guy. And she, like, she opens the door and he's there. And John, like, oh! Like, jumped into, like, the thing. And I was like, John, come on. You had to see that was cut. He's like, I'm sorry. And, like, 5 minutes later in the movie... Nothing scary. A door just opens and makes a sound. Like, it's not even like a jump scare. It's just a door opens and makes a sound, and John's still like, oh! It's like, come on! What is with tunes and running, like, screaming at movie theaters?
I've never done that, as far as I know, so.
Alright, well, you need to talk to your brother about this and, like, get him down. Like, come on, John. It's going to be a real problem with you screaming at movies that aren't scary. I'm trying to remember where we're at in our discussion.
Season 3. I was saying I liked it because Avon and
Stringer
were in it, and that I liked them better than I did Marlo.
Yeah,
so definitely. That's why I couldn't put season 4 above season 3 just because there was no Avon or Stringer in it. So.
Yeah. Overall, though, great season. I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's definitely like close up there. I'm actually trying to think what would be my least favorite season. I guess season 5, maybe.
Yeah, season 5 would be my least favorite. I didn't love the press.
Serial killer.
Yeah,
the newspaper thing sucked because in any other, like, side story they had, they either had a great character they introduced you to, or they took somebody from the other thing. You know, like, Presbo is probably the most, you know, influential and cutty to the kids. But in season 5, you get introduced just a collection of characters.
I don't remember any of their names. And that was obviously the last season I watched, but I don't know any of their names.
There was the girl, there was the guy who lies about his stories.
Yeah, and
that's
another guy who's supposed to be like
an older black guy.
Like the press place. Yeah. Like, of the newspaper. But
you're just like, I don't
like know. It wasn't terrible. I still like that season. But like, when
it has a cool point to make about journalism. Yeah. But
like season four, when they did Tommy Carcetti come in season three or four?
Tom Carcetti starts in three. He's a councilman in that. Season four is his race for governor. Yeah.
But like, I loved him as a character.
Yeah.
And so even though that was a whole new thing they were bringing in,
it's really how I judge Wire seasons, because the Cosmo Roberts part for every season's good. It's always good, no matter what. Definitely. So it's mostly like, do I like the docs more, the kids more, like, or the newspaper more? It's like, it's always the way I have to judge it.
I think mostly what's like season two, three, or four. So is it like docs, Amsterdam, school? You know, which one do you like the best?
I always love it's funny to mention Amsterdam too. If somebody's like, for some reason, like, I don't care about being spoiled for the Wire, like, why are you mispronouncing Amsterdam?
Yeah.
It's like a joke where someone's
there's a silent H in front of it. Like
someone's trying to explain like Amsterdam to these kids. Yeah, like, it's like neutral, like Amsterdam. And it just like becomes like a telephone game where it's just like, yo, the neutral over there, like Hamsterdam or something.
It gets that name from a quote too, like somebody calls it, says something about Amsterdam, and then...
Yeah, that's what they said. Like, they're like, Amsterdam, like, this area will be neutral, like, Amsterdam.
Yeah, and so, then, the one cop, like, had, like, the shaved head, who wore, like, a bulletproof vest on his outside, he's the one reporters to come to Amsterdam.
Yeah, yeah.
He was trying to beat these kids, like, they didn't initially want to go there, they didn't trust it at all. So they had, like, I remember one, they took their shoes and threw them down the gutter. One time they drove him like 3 miles out in the country and just left him, like just doing whatever they could to make them understand. He's like, you dumb shit, it's like Amsterdam, you can do whatever you want. I'm like, what's this Amsterdam you're talking about? And it's like, doesn't correct them, this is things.
Yep,
Amsterdam. Season four though, then, that's, oh, I guess the one thing to mention into season four, Presbo in it is actually starting to kind of get things together and he's finally given his gun back. They basically send him out to get food, I think it is, or something like that.
Him and
he, while he's out there, he sees a drug deal going down, or like a hit going down. He thinks the other guy's a criminal, shoots him, turns out it was an undercover cop. Yeah.
This is season three.
Season three. And that's essentially, he leaves the force after that in shame, because he can't go on doing it anymore.
Yeah.
And what he does is he becomes an elementary school teacher, or I guess high school. No, that must be
elementary school. Yeah, like middle school, seventh grade.
Yeah, I guess it's middle school. I'm private school, so I don't know.
Yeah,
these, I don't know this middle school crazy kids talk
season
about.
Four. Season three when Brother Mazone gets in, and then
season two Brother Mazone gets introduced. Okay. He gets shot in there. Yeah. Brother Mazone is such a wacky character too, just like the opposite of all like Omar, where it's just this extremely well-spoken gangster who reads like obscure black Republican magazines like Harper.
What's the most dangerous thing? Black guy with a library card. Yeah.
You know, you only see him for like a minute where he shoots cheese and then Omar comes in and beats him down. Like, you remember Brother Bazone for being a badass. Like, he only does it one cool thing before he leaves.
Is that like his first scene where he's like sitting on a bench and
cheese shoots comes him like up. A buckshot?
Yeah, and he's like describing the bullet and he's like, what's coming next is my like custom made whatever bullet. And the whole time of that scene, it kills me. Bubbles is like in the distance just like laughing at the whole thing. Everybody else is running because there's like, you know, they heard the bullet fly and Bubbles is just like laughing like, oh, I can't wait to tell Kima about this. Like, Get my McDonald's from Kima for this inside info.
Oh, man. But yeah, no, Brother Mazone doesn't have, like, because he helps kill Stringer Bell in what's one of the coolest moments of the series, like, most iconic.
Oh.
It's like, it's a scene I try to reference, but I can't because I'm like, if people don't understand what's happening, like, I want to be like, you know, I'm like, oh, I just want to get something over with. I'm like, Stringer Bell, like, just do it, motherfucker! But I'm like, I can't say it because they're like, well, what does that mean? I'm like, oh, it's right before Stringer gets a stern lecturing from two people right in the chest.
Yeah.
A real talking to.
Yeah. I love his face, though. I mean, I just thought he was a great actor, but, like, his face when he's like, it's your own boy that turned you in, like...
Oh, when they tell Avon?
Yeah. Because
Avon then sees a sheet of paper and was, like, informant by Stringer, like... what's his first name? Steven? What's his Stringer Bell's first name?
Oh man, I actually like looked this up as trivia at one point, but yeah, I can't remember.
It's like Michael Stringer Bell has like the informant that busted him on like the where he was hanging out with all the guns and grenades and all his boys.
Yeah,
and both. Oh my god, you had to choose a side, Avon or Stringer Bell in that situation. They're somehow going to like separate actively. They both like you take this part, I'll take that part. Who are you going with?
I'm going with Avon,
hands down. Me too. Yeah. Christopher, you can go work at the copy store. I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm like, well, Avon does...
I'm the night manager at the copy store. I can't leave here.
Avon says it best. He tells Stringer, he's like, He's like, I don't think you're tough enough to be out on the streets. And I don't think you're smart enough to be downtown.
You're not smart enough for there. You're not tough enough for here. And he does. That's when he tells him about D'Angelo. He's like, oh yeah, I never had the heart to take a body. What about D'Angelo? Yeah. Yeah, like I feel like I'm gonna say that slip by accident. Like, oh, but he was bad for us.
by the way, he was about to narc on us. So yeah. I actually did us a favor.
You really think about it.
Well, he was about to narc on.
Yeah, he was resigned to stay in prison the rest of his life.
I thought they talked.
He was totally going to narc, and then his mom showed up.
That's right, his mom. Oh fuck, I forgot about.
Which is a great quote too.
We haven't even mentioned D'Angelo's mom.
That's like it's awesome. She tells him like Avon will take everything. He'll say it's all him, but then like you have to be in charge. Like you down for that? And he was like, oh, I'll just go to prison for 20 years. It's whatever. And then he just wants to ride out.
When he's in prison, that
he turns his back on him. He wasn't going
to
snitch.
He turns his back on him. I remember the mom comes in to talk to him, and I forget, she has some conversation with him. It's essentially like to the point of like, don't you fucking rat on him. Like, he did so much for you. Don't you fucking do this to him. But there was like that suspicion. I guess like the cops met him at one point, and that gets back to them. Like, there was a suspicion in Stringer's mind that he had to kill him because he was a liability.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like, fuck D'Angelo, what a nerd.
He was always fucking weak. I think it was that What About Wallace. It was like when he started doing that. It was like, we really gotta get rid of this kid.
This guy, someone's gotta handle this, because this isn't good for us. Season 4, I can't remember where it starts, but there's like one cold opening. I remember where Snoop's buying a nail gun.
Oh, it's the first episode of Season 4. That might be my favorite cold open.
Yeah. It's essentially her at like a convenience or like a hardware store, and the guy, like a salesman, just telling her about all the applications that this nail gun can do.
Yeah,
and she gets so excited, and she just drops like $700. Yeah, like just get hands of $700.
She hands him the cash. She's like, oh no, you pay for it by the register. She's like, oh no, you can handle that.
You sold that shit like a motherfucker.
He's like, you gave me like $200 more than I need. Yeah,
you sold that shit like a motherfucker.
And then she brings it out to the car, and she's like describing how good it is, like.
You know, it's disturbing is like the way it just becomes later. It's essentially what they just use to board your body up in a house so no one will find you.
And the empties, which were in Amsterdam.
That's one of my favorite quotes when Snoop and Chris, like her partner, and they were taking care of Michael's stepdad, which you assume must have touched Michael, right? That's what you get out of it.
Yeah, it has
to be.
And you get the impression that maybe the same thing happened to Chris too.
Yeah, because the way he flips shit on him, like.
Doesn't he touch Michael's little brother? Isn't that?
I don't know. Yeah. I feel like he's in prison. Like a couple of years before that, so his brother would have been like a toddler. So I feel like it has to be Michael.
He go to jail for touching Michael, and then
he gets out, and he's worried about him. He's like holding his arm.
He's like showing the same signs. Yeah. So Michael has him killed, and then Chris, when he finds out about it, just like a very quiet, reserved dude, generally just freaks right the fuck out.
And then he walks away, and she's like, "We didn't even let him get in the house."
I love that part.
One of the sadder scenes, though, is when little Kevin, like, they find out that he, or not, is it not, is it little
Kevin?
Little
Kevin's a fat guy.
Yeah, he's a big fat guy, because I remember, and this is actually.
He only likes the orange ones, I remember that.
Amusingly, I had seen one scene of The Wire before, and I think I saw it at your house, and it was that scene where all the kids are outside, and, like, the cops are busting them, like, which one of you is little Kevin? And I think it's, like, the little kid. Yeah. He's like, they try to ask one of the big kids, like, do I look little to you? And they like, try to bring in the little kids.
Yeah, they say, like, we're bringing everyone on 100 pounds and 5 feet. And then, like, as they're walking away, little Kevin's like, if they get nicknames or irony at all, I would be in jail right now.
But little Kevin, they find out he snitched, and they're like,
Kevin finds out the kid snitched. Frank, what are the four kids named? Michael's
Randy,
the cool
Michael.
One. Randy is the ponytail one.
No, Michael.
Randy's a kid who they think snitches and goes to the boarding house.
Well, he did snitch.
He did snitch.
Michael's kid who becomes like Omar.
Yeah, becomes like Omar.
Stinky kid.
And then there's a kid who's like the toughest one you think at the start. Who ends up getting like.
He gets like pumped out by
coming
out.
What's his name?
Because I enjoyed him. I'll look it up.
Yeah, look that up. That's going to bother me. But I love some of the scenes with those kids when they're like messing around. They like fill the water balloons with pee and then they end up like.
It explodes on the stinky kid right away.
Yeah. Explode all on them.
That's when you find out, like, the one kid's a bitch. Because, like, Michael gets cornered and, like, starts fighting off two kids. And the kid with the ponytail, when we're looking up, is like, I'm just going to hide in this bush for a while. Yeah. He's the one that shows up with, like, new shirt on.
Yeah, because he gets all the fresh clothes.
It's the stinky kid's Duquan, because they had to call him Dookie. I remember his name being so close to his nickname.
Yeah. Yeah, I love this scene with those kids there.
I love when they're going to go after the cop. That's ironically, he steals the ring off of... Well, Omar steals
Marlo's
ring. Then when Omar gets arrested outside the liquor store, the cop steals the ring off him. Mm-hmm. So when they try to get back at this cop, who just beats him up constantly. He's broken like, their friend's fingers for like stealing a car. And like Michael, I guess, took the ring off him. So when like then when Michael sees Marlo later on, he's like, where did you get that ring? He's like, nah, I just took it off some motherfucker. And that's it. Never gets brought up again. He's like, that's totally his ring. You're not going to say anything.
Who's the little short kid who always steals cars?
Kennard. Yeah. Fucking Kennard.
I don't remember that name.
Who?
Yeah, Kennard kills Omar. Because
he kills Omar.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Kennard kills Omar.
No, that's not the kid who steals cars, though. Kennard is the one that works with the kid's ponytail who robbed him and Michael beat up. That's Kennard.
I do think, yeah, there is, I think, actually.
There's a different one. The kid, little kid with dreads, who got his fingers broken. Those are two different kids.
Oh.
Yeah, I do think, actually, now he says, I do think there actually are supposed to be two.
Man, Mikey, where are you? I need someone else to watch The Wire.
Mikey
actually watched it.
Mikey hates the younger kids. I don't think he got too much help out of him. Dookie, Michael, Randy, and Naaman. That's right.
Naaman
is way, Wee Bay's kid.
Yeah.
In case you need a picture of them up here to remind yourselves.
The screen you can only see.
I was about to move it. You can.
No,
You have hips. All right, fine. Yeah. Screw you.
Nobody looks like.
Stop looking at kids.
I don't need your set. I don't look at
some of those scenes in season four though, when they have like teacher meetings and like faculty meetings or whatever, are so realistic. When they're just talking about like all these like initiatives and stuff, and like, the teachers are all like, "Have you been in our classroom? Like, have you seen these kids?" Like,
you might want to edit this part. That's a question you can answer. You can edit like. Is you guys talking like totally write off some kids? They're just like, you know, they're not going to listen to anyone. They're just going to like, they're going to barely pass high school. The way they make that special class for like these ruined children, like just so the other kids aren't affected.
Yeah, like at the school, Matt, there's like emotional support rooms for like some of the kids who were like the kids on the show. But then there's also kids on the show that like remind me of kids that I have in school now. Like I'm not gonna say any kids' names, but like they're very similar to some of these kids.
Is it James?
And, yeah, yeah.
I fucking hate James.
So I think that's one of the reasons why I have a soft spot for season four is because like a lot of these kids remind me of some of the kids I teach.
Does it like give you any stronger? Well, you've already said you wouldn't let that one kid shower, so I guess it hasn't affected you that much.
You're just gonna be a smelly kid. I'll tell you.
You haven't been the Presbo guy who's like, I'll go out of my way to make things easier.
I just think that's weird. Like I don't.
Yeah, I feel like you're just playing with fire. You're telling if it finds out someone. If I hear like, wait, a teacher is doing your laundry and showering with you? What? Why is he showering?
Showering with him?
If you're taking showers and he's there, he must let you in. I don't know.
The amount of candy and snacks that teachers buy to give.
Yeah, because it's all on his credit card. They don't know what they do with it afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I buy plenty of snacks and Gatorades and
for children.
Yeah, yeah. So you'd be surprised how effective like a $7 bag of Starburst how far that can get you as a teacher.
I do remember it was fourth grade, and if you were good for that day, you'd get like a good stamp. And if you did anything bad, you got like no stamp at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got 5 stamps in a row, you got like a candy bar of some sort. And if you got the whole month in a row, you got like a king size, like a full box. And needless to say, never got candy bars that often. Sure as shit, never got the king size box. Like, not break any rule for a whole month wasn't happening. But I really wanted those candy bars. I guess it does work.
It motivates kids a lot. I mean, whatever works. So I can.
Everyone went to Zane North out there. I think it was Mr. Carroll. I want to say. Maybe it's Carroll.
Yeah. So I definitely enjoy season four just because it's relatable to me as a teacher, and a lot of the kids remind me of some of the kids I have. So. But like I said, season three is still my favorite just because Avon Stringer. If Avon Stringer were around season four, it would be my favorite. But
now, we were mentioned, though, earlier today, we were talking about there's a cold opening in season four that starts with Marlo Stanfield, like, buying something in a store, and he, like, looks outside and he sees a cop, and, like, he just makes eye contact with the cop and just clearly takes a lollipop and puts it in his pocket, in front of him. And, like, when he gets outside, the cop's like, come on, man, you know I gotta say something here. And Marlo's just like, you think it's one way, but it's the other.
And just repeating it, that's the gangster.
Yeah, he just says it, and then he kills the cop, too. Like, they kill that cop afterwards.
Yeah.
Oh, so good.
It's brutal. Marlowe does not have as many of the, like, down-home feel, like, because he got, like, a brothership kind of vibe from Stringer and Avon. Yeah. Marlowe, like, this dude is just sadistic at times. Yeah,
because, I mean, Prop Joe is, like, the man, and Marlowe goes against Prop Joe all the time. Like he tells him, you know, the point of the co-op is that we don't have any problems with anybody, and Marlowe's like, ain't nobody got a problem with me right now. Like, why am I going to change what I'm doing? Nobody, like, I don't have any problems.
I do love when they try to get Marlowe to finally get in the group, like, finally convince them. And I think Stringer does it. Like, he tells him, like, you got your car? You got whose name? Like, tells him, like, all the things they can give. And his big thing was, like, he has a whole bunch of soldiers, and his, like, his hit crew was so good. Like, they just got rid of everyone. I remember they'd go to him, and because he would make everyone disappear in the vacants. And I think it was Prop Joe. It was like, listen, we all respect what you do. You wait to have that motherfucker, and they disappear. But we kind of need dead bodies to scare people off.
Yeah, that's
and
good.
That's when it's Snoop and Chris, and, like, we got to go kill one because of a New York gang coming down. It's like, how do we know if the dude's from New York or not? Like, I don't know. Ask them, like, about live music. They don't know anything about that in New York, some shit.
It's great. There was, like, a scene where they had to ask them about, like, a local radio station. Like, yo, what do y'all think about, like, 99.1 in the morning? Like, what you talking about? They just shoot him anyway.
I love when they do, like, a drive-by, and they're like, oh, this is how they do it out in San Fran on the West Coast.
Right. Just misses a whole bunch.
Yeah, they miss, and they come back and hop out of the car and shoot them.
Snoop's like, this is how we do it in Baltimore.
B-more, we're point and shoot.
That I do love, and in the beginning, like, when the music's playing, is every time I see Bodymore Murderland, like, on the spray-painted wall, so every time it says Baltimore or Maryland, like, in my head, right away, I'm like, Bodymore Murderland. It just gets stuck in my head.
It is season four strong overall. I was trying to say there was one scene that was always sad, though, in regards to the houses. I think it's Fat Kev or Little Kev. It might be someone else, though. They're taking him in to kill him, and he's like, accept his own death, but he's like, no, please, don't kill me in there. My people will never know. There'll be no buy. And it's like a sad scene where he's just like, I'll let you kill me, but just, I need my people to know that I'm, you know, like, to see my body. And they're just like,
it was it's gotta be. The guy who ran, like, the bodega that was obviously a drug spot.
That's right. Yeah, I knew it was some, like, bigger fat guy.
And that's what they tried to pin the murder on Omar with when Chris shot, like, the mailman or some shit. I think it was. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't think of the dude's name, actually.
Yeah, so Marlowe ends up being a lot smarter than you think he's going to be. Using the vacants to hide the bodies and just being able to out-negotiate Prop Joe.
On Friday, you bang the chick. On Saturday, you're like, she was definitely a snitch. I shot her.
Right away. That is so brutal.
You talk 10 minutes. How do you know she's working with someone else?
There's like this hot chick who just, like, comes up to Marlowe and starts, like, you know, playing with him and stuff like that. And then, like, they find her, and it's like, oh yeah, she was shot like once in the mouth, and then once in each tit. So, like, the tool she used to try to seduce him with. You're like, oh, that's so brutal. There was no sparing paid for the fact that she was just, like, a tool, essentially, in the thing. Like, no, just a brutal murder. No love in Stanfield's organization. Not nearly as friendly as they didn't have a poot. They didn't have a Bodie. Like, someone can be like, these guys are whack. No scene where it's like, motherfucker, are you taking notes on the meeting here? God, I wish I could remember. That's the one thing I wish Mikey was here for. I know there's a specific line that he says that just infuriates him, too. Like, Poot says something just ridiculously stupid, and that's what, like, me. It's like, motherfucker, like, slaps the goddamn
The way I remember it, it was, like, they had, like, the shittiest product at the time, and, like, they're thinking of, like, different ways to sell it. Like, we can say, like, each tower is running their own sales, and they were all competing, and we can keep changing the name. Then Poot still, like, stands up and is like, yeah, but they're still shitty product, though. And they're like, you dumb motherfucker.
I'm going to try to look it up here. I feel like it's out there, and I can find it on, like, on YouTube. So while I'm doing that, we'll just cut in, and we'll say season five, then. We'll just jump into that.
Do we want to talk about Carcetti? Because that's Carcetti. Carcetti. I'm going to keep saying Carcetti.
Carcetti is great. Again, Timothy Olyphant, I believe, is the actor's name.
That's, like, the other side of season four, too, is kind of that.
The B plot.
The race.
It is a great storyline. It's one of, like, the more realistic ones where you're like, it's a guy who goes into it with very noble intentions, but his
at the end of the day, he's still a white guy in a black city.
Yeah. Well, that and his goals constantly continue to outraise what his actual actions are. Like, he's like, I can't do anything as the mayor because the governor keeps overseeing me. So eventually, like, the big thing in season five is he's running for governor now, and he wins governor. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's the end of the story. Like, that's the end of The Wire. That's where this character story arc ends. But the, like, first thought I think almost everyone has is, like, he's probably still not going to fix Baltimore. Yeah. His aspirations from there are probably just going to be become president. Like, he's just going to keep going from there. I think I did a podcast with Mikey once on this, and he, at the time, it was like 6 years ago, but he was like, it reminds me a lot of Barack Obama, where it's like a guy who has a lot of great aspirations. It's very Republican, Mikey.
Yeah, it is quite Republican.
Where it's like, it's a guy with a lot of great ideals, probably won't amount to a whole lot.
Maybe Kenny, just throwing it out there.
Yeah, he's probably Muslim. Who knows? Kenny doesn't sound American to me. But, no, Carcetti, I liked him a lot.
Yeah, I did too.
As a character, he always had some good lines. His advisor, I remember, there was even, like, the
wouldn't
line
even
was,
vote for him.
Yeah, he's like, my advisor's not voting for me.
I remember, like, in the car, you know, noto meeting? A tuna sandwich. You know, yesterday? A tuna sandwich. No, I'll probably eat tomorrow? A tuna sandwich!
I would love when they just be in the car like 10 minutes late somewhere and they're like yelling, cursing at each other, and he hops out of the car and immediately is just like smiling shaking hands.
He's like, I can't believe I'm going to another geriatric old bullshit ass community thing. And he goes out there, hey guys, great to see everybody. Get there, rock the boat.
He was a strong character. He had some good storyline that went on throughout that season. Season 5 then, it's sort of the same story in 5 because it's like, the start of it's him being like, I can't get anything done, and then it's like suddenly I need to now. Oh, the Wire soundtrack was playing.
Pretty good.
What's it? Yeah, I know, right? I should start playing season 5. See if you remember what that opening sounds like. But I want to try to find that that scene. But anyway, then eventually season 5 just becomes like he starts trying to run for governor then too.
Yeah,
and that's like. It's one of the more real, like, sad parts, like, of the truth of what The Wire shows at the end. You're just like, man, this really isn't going to change. It really is just a cyclical thing. Have you ever watched, I don't know if it was Funny or Die or not, but Wire the Musical?
I've seen that, yeah. That was Funny or Die, I think.
Yeah. And there's, like, a line in it where they're just, like, they're trying to, like, explain, like, how The Wire works, like, in song, and, like, they just get to the thing. It's, like, a system of checks and balances. Personal preference will always be undermined by, you know, what a person's actions are actually trying to be done. It's just like, oh... You could have cut it to the core, Funny or Die.
Yep.
That's where Snoop comes out like in a dress and just doesn't do anything. Like, I'm wearing a dress and that's it. It's over for her. The whole scene.
I would just love it. It's like, and Tazon Day, a stringer bell. Like, stringer, do bell. It's like this big fat guy. Like, I hate 40-degree days.
40-degree days. That's a great.
Oh, what a great part,
too. Speech. Yeah, I forgot all about that.
It's a good one. I always like disagree with it though, because I'm like 40-degree days. That's way too cold. Yeah. That's ridiculous. I don't know what you're talking about, Stringer. Yeah. Maybe in Baltimore, it's better. But all right, hold on. I think I may have it. So I'm gonna pause the podcast through here so we can listen to it and come back in just a moment.
Boop, 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 boop.
Oh wait, no, I haven't paused yet.
Jesus Christ!
There. All right, now we remember what it is. The line as it is that. They're having, like, the discussion, as you said, they have, like, the whole, like, the chair recognizes thing. Oh, like, finally, Stringer puts it down, and Bodhi, like, raises his hands, like, does the chair recognize me? No, Bodhi's the one who actually says this.
Are you sure?
Yeah, because he's the one who gets fed up. He's like, does the chair recognize we're about to look like a bunch of punk-ass bitches out there? And then Stringer, like, slaps the point, like, motherfucker! Yeah. And, like, it cuts there.
No, because Shamrock said, like, Stringer, he had the floor!
Oh, that's right! Stringer, the floor!
This stupid motherfucker's not smart enough to have a floor.
Oh my god, this show is just way too good at times.
Oh, so
great. So many good scenes, so many good moments. Season 5, though, is ultimately it's about this newspaper. Like, the newspaper is now reporting on things. That's kind of like the side story, which is so weird because I think the show ended in like 2005. Or like 2006, 2007, yeah, somewhere around there.
Close to there, 2007.
But, even then, you're like, newspaper was dying. Like, even in the show, they mentioned it, but I was still like, it shouldn't have been this big of a thing. Like, newspaper industry is starting to go away.
That's the entire thing that the newspaper people are talking about, how everything is, like, crashing. How there's only a couple newspapers left. Like, this is a dying art. We're not going to be here much longer.
But it was, like, one of those things. It was a hard storyline to care about, just because the characters involved in it just weren't interesting. Okay. As I said, the big character in it was, like, a guy who's lying about being involved in the story he is in.
Yeah.
And in the cop storyline, there's a little bit of Marlowe in it, but the larger thing is McNulty creating, like, a fake serial killer that exists, so he could basically keep their unit getting funded, I believe.
Yeah, so they would. So I'm not sure how they did it, where they committed this fake serial killer that Freeman would say that that's what they're looking for, but in turn they're really just doing all that surveillance and money and doing it on Marlowe, not this bullshit serial killer.
Like, his phone number was actually like Marlowe's phone number for like a wiretap. And
yeah.
Just because they wanted to cut the police budget. Like, that's when...
That's the big thing. Budget was low that season.
Yeah, with, like, all the politics, budget's a huge thing, and they're like, should we give it to the school? Should we give it here? And he's trying to... Carcetti's trying to make his run for governor.
That is right. And it's a rough season in that regard. It's tough, too, because you have to watch McNulty going almost completely insane at points. Yeah. Like, it's really... He's been a drunk throughout the series.
Yeah,
like,
but is it season four where he kind of gets his... He gets his life together. He's not in season four as much, but that's when he's, like, with...
No, that's season three. It's right after the docks. Was 1B. And he doesn't want to be, like, a death... Like, he just wants to deal with...
He's like a family
street
man. He's not going out every night. And
patrolman. He doesn't want anything to do with Stringer Bells, whatever. It's done over and done with.
And he kind of relapses. Yeah. Season five, he just goes crazy.
Yeah. It's like it's every day completely hammered, like high fun, like the heights of high functioning alcoholism.
Like, even Bunk starts to have enough of it.
Like, Bunk's like, you drunk motherfucker, get out of here.
I love that scene is when McNulty and I think someone else, they go to the FBI, like, Criminal Minds esque people, and they're describing what the serial killer is supposed to be like. He's like, probably 30, 35, white, male, most likely divorced, not married.
They start complimenting.
High drinking, like, probably, like, with a menial job where he feels not, like, respected in. Like, it just describes him to a T.
And then, like, comes in with, like, the line where it's, like, college, barely college educated, but thinks himself smarter than anybody else in the room. And it's just him being like, oh, I love that.
I can't remember who he's with, but, like, what do you think they did? Like, they probably did pretty good. They did pretty good on that.
I figure whoever's with him knows it, too. Like, knows he's been faking it. Right? I think it's Kima, and she's just like, they nailed you, bitch. Yeah. But it's also the season where everything starts to wrap up, because they knew season five was their last.
Yeah.
And I think it was the same length as the rest of the other season. I think maybe one episode shorter.
Yeah.
But it's where everything started to have to kind of wrap up, and, like, you get to the end, you're like, oh, wow, Marlowe, essentially... He gets off, but not for the better. Like, he gets off, and basically the way things have worked, he's going to have to get into, like, more legitimate business as well, kind of like what Stringer wanted to do. And he can just tell immediately he hates it.
Yeah.
Like, you see him at, like, a fancy dinner party, and he's just like, fuck this.
Levy figures out somehow, like, this wiretaps are totally illegal. There's no way that would ever be admissible in court. But they could still have other stuff, so they break it down, where, like, he just had to walk away from the drug business, and he kept, like, some $10 million. So he just couldn't sell drugs anymore.
Yeah.
Which is an awesome scene, like, after it's over, and he's, like, walking the streets, and these two, like, young kids who I guess don't know him at the time or don't recognize, like, no, I am. They said no, and Marlowe just beats him up, and then, it's awesome.
But it is cool, because
he doesn't get away.
It's, like, that ongoing story of, like, the streets are constantly changing, and, like, how the streets, like, once you leave it, you stop being a figure within them. I've always thought, it's, like, one of those scenes, why is it an insanely smart show, and they don't have to tell you all the stuff that you know, like, they're going for? One of the scenes I always remember is season five is where Omar dies.
Yeah.
Like, he comes back. Essentially, he's lost much of his power. Most of his friends are dead. He goes, like, Mexico, and he finds out they killed, like, his bank.
Yeah.
That blind guy in the bar.
Yeah, that's one of the toughest scenes, I think.
Oh,
when they kill the blind guy. Because, they torture him before they kill him. Because they're trying to find out where Omar is. So they're like, where's Omar?
He doesn't give him up.
Yeah, he doesn't give him up. Shout out to the blind guy.
Like, Omar's boyfriend the first season, like, his love of his life snitched on him right away, and he killed hundreds of people for him. And this blind guy didn't give him up.
He comes back for him, though, and then he teams up with, like, these two fat gay guys. Like, these two fat gangsters, I recall. And, like, they go after Marlowe. Those two die. And I remember, like, Omar, like, leaps out of the building. He goes into the building to get him, like, it finds out there's a trap, there's a bomb inside, and he, like, has to, like, leap out the third-story window.
That's some Spider-Man.
He doesn't say, like...
They, like, call him Spider-Man, and, like...
I thought they said they got some Wolverine shit, and then someone corrected me, like, no, Wolverine, Spider-Man's what you're talking about. I thought there was some, like, nerdy comic book reference that he gets corrected on.
I love that scene where it's Omar in jail, and the two gangster dudes that die with him later on, but he doesn't know at the time, like, show up in the cell with him. So he's, like, getting ready to fight. Like, nah, we're here. We're butches. That was the blind guy's name. We're butches friends. And, like, one was like, why are you in for it? It's, like, being black in Baltimore. It's the only reason why we're here. And they just tape him up with phone books and magazines. I loved it because, like, that's, like, the next, like, 10 minutes later, they're supposed to be, like, going to chow line. And I remember him saying, like, I think they got, like, the Cocoa Puffs or whatever cereal they went for to get.
Yeah.
And then some guy tries to stab him, but Omar, like, overpowers him. And, like, Omar, like, licks at his back of his neck and then, like, stabs him in the ass. Like, if we had more time together, we'd be way more comfortable. And it was awesome.
It was funny when you mentioned the scene with him and that, though. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember it. And then it turns out everybody in the jail cell was on his side. And I was like, oh, no, I'm just thinking of when Chalky was in the jail scene.
Everyone was not on the boardwalk.
Yeah, no. But that, it's great. But what I was going for is he dies in that season. And, like, the end of that episode, after he dies, it's a shot of him in the morgue. And, like, the guys walking by, like, the, you know, the mortician. And he, like, looks and he sees the tag on the body. He's, like, clearly some, like, obscure white guy, like some nerdy white guy in Overlord's body. It's like, oh, the cards got mixed up, and he just switched them around. That's the end of the episode. It doesn't, like, you're like, what a weird, queefy end of the episode. You're like, oh, it really kind of goes to show just how little Omar, like a legend on the street, meant absolutely nothing post-death.
It was the same situation with the newspaper, because it was like the guy that's running that group in the newspaper, and it was like, we need to fill 3 inches. And it's like, oh, we have this murder of this one guy in a convenience store, or a small fire in a car. It's like, I go with the fire. Better pictures.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't even get a little blurb. Nothing.
He doesn't get a mention in the paper. Fucking Kennard, that asshole, too.
Oh,
out of nowhere.
Like, I felt a little bad when Michael beat the shit out of him. But not that bad, because he did steal the package. But like, oh, what a little shit. I really hope bad things happen to him.
I remember when it was when Breaking Bad was coming to an end, there was, like, a list of, like, the top 10 ways the series could end. And, like, number 9 was, like, Kennard shoots Walter White out of fucking nowhere in a convenience store.
Out of nowhere.
It is. It's crazy. Like, he just goes in to buy stuff, and he's just, like, Pat the Mangle. He's like, oh! It's rough. But
it is rough.
It is still cool to see. He goes out, you know, he doesn't go out like a badass. It's no, like, blaze of glory. It's, like, a real limping into his death moments.
Cause it's literally just limping, because he just jumped out of the building.
So. Yeah, and broken his leg, and then
yeah,
the legend almost kind of precedes him, though, but it is rough, and then everything just kind of keeps going cyclical, and then wrapping up from there, they get, you know, the wrap-up of, like,
even like all these characters. They're getting Clay Davis in court,
because
they find all the bodies in the empties, and that's when Daniels is like, oh, so one corrupt politician is worth more than 22 dead bodies, good to know. And that kind of summarizes, like, the police department and the politics behind the whole thing.
The same thing with the docs. Like, they're saying all these dead murders. Like, wait, we can bust up the unions? Yeah. Like, well, no, why are you guys worried about that?
Who cares? It's a vodka! Oh, and I realized just by going over through season 4 so much, we skipped, like, one of the hardest... You say the hardest scene is Bubbles calling Herc and, like, getting completely hung up.
That whole period, like, every day, that guy would beat the shit out of him.
It's the guy with Bubbles.
It was so sad.
I feel bad for Bubbles.
I almost don't get it. Like, part of me is like, it's Bubbles and Kennard. That Kennard. Who's his...
Sherrod.
Sherrod. Like, there's two of you. How can you not take this one strung out dude?
Yeah.
You gotta want him more. You gotta fight.
But, Randy is, like, this character who Carver is really trying to take care of, and he gets, like, his house firebombed on, like, Christmas, and Carver, like, promised him, like, whatever you need, man, I'm gonna be there for you, and it's, like, the shot of Carver, or, of Randy in the hospital, his foster mom's in there, like, third-degree burns all over her, he's, like, clearly being told you're gonna get put into, like, a boarding school, and, like, as he's walking away, you just hear him like, I thought you said you'd be there, Carver.
You got me, Carver.
Where were you going to be for me? And it's just so heartbreaking because you know Carver wanted to be there. It's not like Herc where he just didn't answer a phone or something like that. It was a situation completely out of control. And he tries to then adopt him afterwards, too. Like, he tries so hard to get him. Like, that's what makes it so rough.
Speaking of Herc, how did Herc get a job for life?
How does Herc get a good ending? It's like, so annoying.
Levy's obviously a smart dude. Like, he had to know Herc was a cop.
I thought that's why he did it. He's a cop, so he can give me an insight into their office. Because he's clearly a dirty cop.
He never
too.
Like ask Herc for any insight.
I thought it seemed like a mistake
that Levy made, which I feel like Levy never made mistakes. Like
I think that's at the very end because Levy figures out something because Marlo can't be charged. I feel like he gets that because Herc gave him the number for to, you know, have the whole thing started, but like it's illegal for him to just give out that number, and Levy figured that out. Maybe that's how it happened. And I remember him like putting his arm around Herc, like we're going to get this drug kingpin scot-free off. Dude, we're going to make so much money off all the rest of these drug people. Like, I would be the drug lawyer for everyone. And it's all spawned from Herc.
It definitely is, like, just a system. Like, Herc seems to provide him something. I guess his connections to the police department give him something. It is, like, a disturbingly good position for him.
Yeah.
Like, he still gets to be, like, a dumb musclehead when he needs to.
Yeah.
And that's a guy, that actor does not seem capable of playing a role that he isn't just a complete asshole.
Al Capone's brother in Boardwalk Empire.
He plays a shithead in that. He plays Kingpin's dad in the flashbacks in Daredevil, if you've seen that at all.
I haven't seen
it. He just plays another shithead. He just plays a really drunk asshole dad who beats his kid and wife. And you're like, this guy just can't play.
He's a bodyguard for the mayor. You're like, I feel like that's this guy's job in real life, is like a bodyguard.
Yeah. A guy who is not, like, and it's a mayor who's been assassinated twice somehow. Like, he's just that bad at his job.
I feel like this guy checked my ID before I went into a bar. Like, he just seems like a bouncer, like a real, like...
Yeah, I've probably seen him around sometime downtown. Club, yeah. So, we're getting on to about 2 hours now, so...
One more hour?
Nobody's listening by now.
The hardcore Mikey is, and that's the only audience, and maybe John Boy. By the way, are we not allowed to call him John Boy?
You can call him. I think it's great that you guys still call him John Boy. I call him John Boy.
Okay. We were told not to call him John Boy.
How's that a bad nickname?
I don't think it's a bad nickname. I never called him John Boy.
Like, you're gonna be Tommy.
But it was like you guys always
Tommy.
Called him John Boy.
That's what we were always told to call him.
And yeah, I don't know how that's
eventually right. It just became like, don't call him John Boy anymore. He's an adult now. Just call him John. I was like, I grew up calling him John Boy every day though.
Call him John Boy.
Like, I have him in my phone as John Boy. Should I change it to just John?
Nope.
All right. Don't cool. Go. I like how we ask you for permission as opposed to...
I'm not worried about John Boy. John's can't imagine. Agent.
I'm like, I'm going to go through
your John Boy's Herc. Like, if you really... If there's something that's done, we call you.
I'm Herc.
Yeah. You got the physique of Herc. Like, you know, just a lot more cut. Herc always seemed like a strong guy.
The compliments are starting to get weird now. I'm starting to side with
you. In shape. I get it. He's in shape. But
he's talking about like the orders off my butt and stuff.
I'm not trying to make this weird. I'm just saying your ass is like two gerbils fighting under a piece of tissue paper. Is that something weird?
I don't even know what that means. Okay.
Want to go to the bar, Tom? Maybe with a
I'm just saying. The bar's still open. What's going on? Yeah. Stallion.
Yeah, I was going to say, not cool. Stallions, Chris.
Parking in rear is what they say on it.
It's going back to Omar and stuff. We want to go back into the wire. But, like, with him and Brother Mazzone are about to go Stringer Bell, and, like, we're about to go through the front, and Brother Mazzone makes this dig. Like, you're probably not used to that or something like that. Like,
that should be new
funny.
For you.
Like, here's a little dig. Good job.
What a good gay joke, Brother Mazzone.
Did you guys ever see on Grantland, you know that website? It's like a sports and pop culture website.
I know of it. I don't really
know. They did, Wire Top. I can't remember if they did 64 or 32. I feel like they did 32. They made like a bracket. People voted on favorite character. And Omar won that, so.
Obviously.
Yeah. But it was kind of interesting to see like some of the upsets and like.
So there's no scene with Omar that's not good. Like his quotes are the most memorable. Every scene with him is either really gangster or really funny.
He's just cool too. Yeah. Like, he's, you know, he's like.
His cadence is cool. Yeah.
Like the first time you see him, when you just hear like the whistling of Farmer and Dell, he walks out and just kills like three people.
Yep.
It is
Come
great.
The king, you better not miss.
That fight with Weebay is great. Wasn't there another? I feel like there was another enforcer in that group in season one too. Like it was Weebay,
Stinkum, Weebay, and one more.
Stinkum? Was it Stinkum or
Stinkum? Stinkum is the one he testifies against. Weebay ends up going to jail, and the third one he shot like when Weebay and some other guy are going to kill Scar. That's how much of a nerd I am. Like that's how we like. The one time they mentioned Scar, it's like, on the corner, Scar, we got to kill him, don't worry about the other guy. He's only gonna shout the shotgun blast, and that's when he shoots at Weebay but doesn't get him.
So I can't Good to know. That. Good to know, Sean. On a topic then of favorite Wire characters, could you guys name a top five?
I mean, Omar would be one, so then it's like a top four.
Yeah. Top four. So yeah, top four from Tommy at least.
I feel like Bodhi's up there for me.
Bowie, okay.
kind of obscure choice.
No, I don't think it's obscure at all. I think he made my top five when I did one.
It probably been mine.
Yeah, Bodhi's up there.
It's tough though, because then you stop and you think of all these other great characters.
Yeah,
I'm gonna throw people out there like Bonk, Leicester.
Like, Bunk and Leicester, I don't think any of them would be top five.
Leicester
for me.
Doesn't make it?
Leicester doesn't top make five. The top five.
McNulty? Whole, like, Bunk might.
See, like, that's the one where it's like, I feel like McNulty would be in my top five, but there's also times when I didn't like, I didn't, like, McNulty season five, it was like, you're going crazy, but, like, I feel like he would sneak into the top five for me.
Avon, Stringer, Presbo, Carver. Feel,
yeah, Avon would be in there for me.
I think mine would be all four of the gangsters, and then maybe Bunk at the very end, like, when it comes to comedy. Yes. It would be, like, Nico, Omar, Avon, which I don't seen Avon. Like, I liked Avon more than Stringer Bell, but Stringer is in it way more.
Yeah.
Probably Avon and Bodie. But Bubbles is so, like, and you can't, like, dude, like, Bubbles, like, he was such a good person to be in it. Like, he played it so...
The only thing I didn't like about Bubbles was I was like, all right, how many meetings are we going to have before he finally just, like, gets it off his chest?
Well, that's the thing. It's like, Bubbles is, like, it's a slow burn, and you have to accept that slow burn because it's going to be repeated over. It's not like there's an arc, really. It's like he goes up, and then he just keeps going down and down and down. And season five, it's like finally pick him back up.
Yeah, Presbo might sneak into my top five just because of season four. And just
he's snuck into mine. He's,
like,
definitely one of my
going
favorites.
From, like, a character I thought would be my least favorite character to
someone
you,
like, really respect. Because that's the thing. He has, like, a cameo. Like, season four, he's involved with a lot. But then season five, because it's not about the kids anymore, he stops being a factor. Yeah. But they cut back to the school at one point. Like, Dookie goes back to the school, I think, to get help or something like that. And you see him, and he's grown this beard. And it's cool, because you see this character who is a complete... like, kind of like a milksop in his first teaching year. Like, he's, you know, when there's a fight that breaks out in the school, he gets, like, really
cowardly
and
what
scared
to do.
About it.
And then there's a fight, and he, like, handles it. And
he's grown his beard.
See, like, you got it figured out now. And then he gives him money knowing he's going to go.
Yeah, he knows completely, like, it's just going to be the way it is. But he's done everything he possibly can to help this kid out. Would you help a kid out, give him money, even though you know it's going to be used for drugs?
Oh, really put you in the spot.
I'm going to knock you fired doing him this podcast.
You don't want to hear the last cold podcast on me, because it's not looking good. If I'm... I might be doing
like,
two.
I don't know how wide your audience spreads here, but I'm gonna knock you fired.
The next thing you hear about me is I'm doing 5 to 8 somewhere. Like, it's not looking great.
I can't give this kid money. He's gonna go right to Sean Toon, that drug dealer who sells to 8-year-olds.
It was such a random. Like, no, you better edit it. Like, what's the youngest? What?
I didn't ask. You didn't answer it.
No, but
so it's fine.
I barely meet Tommy. He doesn't know anything about me.
We can talk off the podcast.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll ask that off podcast. Yours is Omar, Presbo.
Omar, Presbo, Bodie,
Avon,
and either Frank or Nico.
I mean, I'd have
probably
to,
Frank.
I'm going to push Frank on you.
Yeah, probably Frank.
Yeah.
Omar, Nico. I mean, I'm big season two, so both of them are going to be in it. Frank. Avon. And Bodie. I don't know, I like Chris a lot, too. He was a gangster ass dude.
Oh, Chris, yeah. He doesn't have many great quotes, though, I guess, is the only thing against him.
I was really like, I don't know, that scene where he's walking Michael's dad. It's like, so you ever been with a man? He's like, nah, about prison. Boy, he's like, no, you know, in prison, you do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
They get out, like, about boys. He's like, nah, I'm not some faggot or something. He just beats the shit out with a gun, like, right away. Like, he said, no, maybe he's lying. maybe Michael doesn't like him because he didn't buy him the game he wanted in Christmas. You don't ever really know.
I did a top five the last time, but it's probably, I don't know, maybe like retrospective would change, so I'd probably put it at like Presbo in there, then less, like, this isn't a top five in order, it's just top five in
general. Except for
Omar. Yeah. Leicester, Omar, it's tough between either Colvin or Carver. I'm going to go with Carver, I guess. I like long burn kind of characters.
All right.
And probably finish it off with Sabaka, Frank Sabaka. I like Leicester a lot, though. He was one of, probably my favorite cop in the group. Although Daniels is a great character, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, favorite cop? The Bunk.
Bunk's my favorite.
Yeah.
I like
Bunk,
Leicester, though.
Bunk,
he's such
McNulty.
A cool character.
Leicester would be, like, third for me behind Bunk and McNulty.
I feel like if Mikey was here, he'd be able to side with me and be like, no, Leicester's a cool character.
He's all right.
It was weird. Mikey's usually the bad guy favorite, and I feel like he liked a lot more of the cops on the show than anyone else. Although he would be here being like, y'all crazy. Stringer Bell was the best.
He does have a thing for Idris Elba.
He does. I mean, we all do. He's handsome, but... He's too
a
old
lot of your
dog.
Podcasts are talking about dudes and being like they're really ripped.
Did you not listen to the Lushy Lush Wine podcast?
I guess, where, Terry was talking about at least hot dudes.
Where we spent half the podcast counting down the top five hottest dudes in Hollywood.
It was like top 50. It was like the whole podcast.
Who was number one on this list?
Who was it? It was someone ridiculous. Someone not
Chris
that
Pratt?
Hot.
I thought. Was that a joke? It was Chris Pratt.
Were you like following a list, or was this your?
Yeah, no, they just made it. Everyone made a 50 list of hottest dudes.
I like.
You got mentioned several times in each list.
I was like,
I'm not even famous in any of the lists.
Number four, Tommy Toon. Number three, Thomas Toon. Number two, our cousin T-Toon. Tommy. Number one, T Tommy Toon. Hot DJ Tommy Toon.
John Boy's brother.
John Boy's brother, Tommy Toon. Now, I forget who number one was. It was like Tom Hiddleston or some bullshit. It was like someone you're like, oh, they're not that hot at all. I don't know, maybe women's standards have gotten lower.
But yeah, those girls, they're low standards. Well, actually, yeah.
Yeah, come on. So, as I said, we're over 2 hours long at this point. Solid wire talk. I feel like if we find out any more of our cousins watch us, we should gather together again and do a wire podcast. I feel like I need to get you and John on a podcast.
There you go.
Yeah, with Mikey with us, and we should talk about some old memories. There's a lot of stories I feel like I need to ask you guys about with trips I took with your dad.
Yeah, definitely.
And the two of you.
Yeah.
I recall hikes on Peter Mountain that ended
a lot of those.
In very disastrous ways at points in time.
I remember I cut part of my finger off on Peter Mountain.
Yes. Wild Tommy, as we used to call you, just threw like a glass bottle at one point and like just shredded your hand in half.
Yep.
Completely killed the end of that trip, too.
That was my birthday weekend, too.
I know.
Like, you were just randomly invited to all of our birthday
parties. Your dad, I think, invited me to a lot of things. He's like, look, if we don't invite him, he's going to grow up to be a serial killer and kill himself. Like, someone's gonna take this kid and give him some male influence.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, we'll have to have you again on sometime. Yeah, and I guess we'll finish this up with maybe our final thoughts on The Wire.
It's all right.
It's pretty good.
I think I'll leave it, really.
To this episode, Way Down in the Hole, as it'll be called.
Good name. So, yeah. It's my favorite show of all time. Definitely favorite drama of all time. Sometimes it's hard to compare like a 30-minute comedy show with a drama to completely different
It
things,
is one of the shows that like, because we were just watching a couple episodes today, I was like, geez, this show feels so long, but it is only an hour long each time.
Yeah.
Like there's so much content in it. Like it uses the time so effectively.
I definitely don't know anyone who's watched it who it's not their favorite show.
I don't know if I've ever seen anybody who's watched it and hasn't just like loved it.
Yeah.
Like I've never even heard of someone who's like, I was okay.
Yeah.
Like anyone I hear watched it, they're like, I love
it. I definitely have tried to convince other people to watch it just to like give me an excuse to watch it again.
And just talk to them, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember Allison and I had to live together about 4 months at a time, and I felt like she watched Oz right away. I'm like, check out The Wire. And she got two episodes in, and she's like, I'm not really liking it. And I don't know, at the
you
time, I really like, this isn't going anywhere. I'm like, Stringer Bell,
like,
he's handsome.
You're like, can't
you have to pull a Marlo and pop three bullets in it.
You're like, can't Mikey come in here and awkwardly talk to your girlfriend and make things work?
It really made me think about stuff. But it really, like, I always think, my favorite show, if I was ever in Stranded Island, you go get one DVD box set and somehow be able to play it, and that's all you get for the rest of your life. I'm like, Wire, hands down. If that's the only thing I'm going to be stuck with, and I'm just going to watch The Wire.
It is one of those shows, like, like I feel like it's arrogant to even say something like that, but I feel like it's such an important show for people to watch. No, but I'm not to say. It's just an important show, I feel like, for people to watch, because I feel like it gives you a lot of context to a part of society that maybe you don't understand.
I completely agree. And the fact that it was written by 40-year-old white dudes.
Yeah. That, like, managed to, like, be so popular within black culture.
It's definitely...
Not to make this podcast even longer, but like the fact that they didn't get like anything, no Emmys,
no
nothing.
No one got nominated.
I mean, not for us
actor.
To say, obviously, but like, was it racist? Like, it really the all black cast, pretty much.
I mean, it also ran during time, I guess, that HBO had other bigger shows going on, because it ran the same time Sopranos was going on.
During the beginning, but I feel like towards the end, like, it was just The Wire. Like, Sopranos ended before that.
I just feel like there was something else going on. Like, what year? I guess I'll look this up, but. Trying to, like, determine what years The Wire ran from, and then...
Yeah, so kind of 2000, to see like who they lost, like, but it was never even nominated for anything.
I never looked it up. I think I've heard it didn't get Jack, which to me is insane.
It's a tough show for someone to get nominated as like best actor, best supporting actor, because
24 was running during that time.
But just like best writer, best drama.
I mean, Boardwalk Empire got a bunch of nominations,
and I don't think that's nearly as good. I think it's very good.
Yeah, it's a good show.
I don't think
it
beats The Wire.
But that's season 5. Woo wee! What a stinker, right?
Wire now?
Or Boardwalk.
Boardwalk, okay.
I mean, really, once Richard died, no spoiler for another show, I guess. But once Richard died, I lost everything.
The dude with the mask, he does. Spoiler
alert. So, outstanding drama.
Somebody there is like, I'm not going to watch The Wire, but Boardwalk Empire, I'm definitely going to get to it. I can listen to this. It's no big deal.
Yeah, it's not going to screw me out on that.
No, he does.
Outstanding dramas during that time. These were nominated 24, Sopranos, West Wing, House, and Grey's Anatomy.
House beats it?
House was nominated above it. Grey's Anatomy was nominated. I thought that was like a soap opera, like a cheesy late night soap opera.
A lot of people love Grey's Anatomy.
A lot of people love it. Can it be called an outstanding drama series?
I didn't
really
like The Wire.
Was The Wire nominated for anything though? Like at all?
Let me see if I can pull up. Let's see if it was nominated for anything that year. Hope if I could spell The Wire right. And doesn't look like that year it wasn't. Let me just look
Catholic
up.
Catholic school education.
How dare you?
Us public school kids would have been on this.
Public school kids would have looked this up ahead of time. Emmy, Wire.
We should just make this two-part and just start doing family stories, too. Might as well.
We can. I don't know how late you could be here.
You have a curfew?
Yeah, I got up at 6, but what time is it?
9:20.
I can stay a little bit.
All right, well, let me...
Oh, I missed my train.
Sorry. List of Emmy... And awards and nominations received by The Wire. It received It was nominated for Outstanding Writing for a Drama Series in 2005 and 2008. So it was nominated twice for writing. But that's...
Is that when it started? Five?
2000... I think it started 2004. Let me just see. The Wire. I'm going to look up like its exact dates it run. Oh, Edgar Awards.
So
I thought it said Edgar Wright.
The third season then?
2008 would definitely have been the fifth season. Let's see here. 2002 to 2008. So 2005, I guess, would have been season 3.
Yeah.
I guess it's
take a year
season 3 and season 5 it got nominated.
Yeah, it got one episode in season 3, one episode in season 5.
Season 5 nomination is probably like, it's last season. We need to nominate this for something.
Let's see. It got nominated for the episode 30.
Plus season 5.
Which was the series. Which was
so the people were nominating the award.
Which was the episode, that was the final episode of the series as well, that got nominated. What was the other one? Middle Ground.
Besides Omar dying, what else happened in the final episode? Like, this the wrap-up?
Omar didn't die in the final episode, he died two or three episodes before it.
I can't really think
of
what
happened.
It was
just the wrap-up. It's like they find that they don't catch Marlo, McNulty gets kind of let go from the force.
Did Joe die in the last episode?
No, he dies. He dies very unceremoniously, like, in the third to last episode.
That's one thing I did, like the very end, though, how they always did the eulogies for the cops, and the way they did one for McNulty and stuff. Yeah. Like, that was pretty sweet. And the fat guy that did the, hello, Mikey, or hello, McNulty. He did the eulogy,
McNulty,
crying. To the guy that's not dead.
Oh, Middle Ground is the episode we watched earlier, too. The one where they kill off Omar. Or not Omar. They kill off Stringer. Yeah, we ain't got a dream no more, man. It's a pretty good line there. I'm trying to find what the name of that fat cop is. But, yeah, I don't have time for all that. As you know. No, I enjoy the show so much. I wish it got more accolades and mentions from people. It's just a show that I feel like more people should really just stop and enjoy and appreciate.
One of my favorite Family Guy quotes, it was, I think, Peter, and his eyes go like a droning thing. It was like, Breaking Bad is the best show ever. Breaking Bad is so good. Except for maybe The Wire. The Wire beats Breaking Bad. And some, like, 10 people sent me that, like, 5-second YouTube clip on my email. It's like, this is you. Always talking about either The Wire or Breaking Bad. And they are. It's true. They are the best shows, in my opinion.
I definitely cannot argue The Wire, like, and at least Breaking Bad season 1.
I don't
separate podcast.
I've never seen Breaking Bad now.
Separate
watch Breaking Bad. I guarantee you'll like it. If you like The Wire, I feel like you'll like Breaking Bad.
At least season 1 of Wire after Breaking Bad.
But the whole thing, it's all good.
And the bear was a really big, long cock tease that goes nowhere.
Breaking Bad?
Yeah. But there's the fucking cold openings. It's like the teddy bear in the water for like, eight episodes. And you're like, oh, it's
spoiler,
just...
Spoiler, it's Breaking Bad here.
Spoilers for Breaking Bad, yeah. But it's a fucking completely irrelevant... Not irrelevant, but it's an event that does not connect to fucking Walter White at all.
It does. It's the dude...
Not when like, eight scenes show, like, police officers around his house, like, oh, something crazy happened at Walter White's house.
That's the
point.
Like, no, built suspense.
So, no, a plane just happened to crash into his pool. And it's completely unrelated
to
all this drug stuff.
Connected to still. It's linear. What the fuck do you want to keep saying constantly through the whole process?
We'll have a different podcast for this. We can't do this now. No, I was just going to say, though, final cursory tie mentioned to Walk Air to The Wire. Did anyone here watch Treme?
Yeah, done.
You went to the attack. Is it good? I tried like 3 or 4 episodes because it's written by David Simon.
It's,
and I'm like, this seems like it's good, but oh my god, there's no crime in it at all, and I'm just getting really
bored.
That's
what's rough, because like HBO shows are either Mafia, or you know, The Wire at the gangs and drugs, or Oz, you're in prison and people are dying everywhere, and Tremaine's like, yeah.
There's a lot of chefs in the city who just can't get things together.
It sucks still, it's good, like I definitely enjoy it enough to watch all of it. It's not one of the shows I'm going to push on people, because I just watched it because I liked it well enough. And after 2 seasons, you don't quit on it. Plus, John Goodman's in it. I like John Goodman a lot.
I've always... Like,
and I respect The Wire to keep following those people, so...
It's always been the joke Mike used with me, like, if it's ever, like, a situation or something I have to really accomplish, like... And, alright, this bus, you know, to get to the bus downtown tonight, everybody just has to answer one simple Treme trivia question, like, oh... Screw me, man. I can't.
This is David Simon fan club bus. Like, everyone's here because we're fans of him.
Just answer one. Yeah, one David Simon question. Like, all right, I should be able to do this. In Treme, I'll walk. I'll just you let me out here. All right. I think that's going to do it, guys. Good podcast here.
We got like 2.5 hours talking about The Wire.
Not 2.5 total. And there's a little bit at the beginning where we talked about Tommy and his rippling abs. And
yeah.
This is so creepy. It's so much more weird when he's here.
And how that t-shirt.
I just have been Mikey salivating the entire time you guys are talking about.
Mikey's listening, just nodding his head in solemn agreement the whole time. Like, Tommy is immaculate.
You didn't even mention his pecs. His pecs are beautiful.
Yeah, you haven't mentioned his thighs in a while. Has he been working them out?
His baby blues, you just fall into them. Why aren't you mentioning it? Chris, right? Texted you.
I texted you so many times. Talk about
The eyes!
Talk about Tommy's Chris Hemsworth-like body. I got it, Mikey. Calm down. And we're back. You thought The Wire podcast was over. You were like, Christopher, it's been almost 2.5 hours. How can you guys still possibly have more to talk about The Wire, even after you closed it? Well, ladies and gentlemen... That's because we have back the one and only Michael Larios.
Oot, 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 oot.
You almost got it, buddy.
Pretty close.
A little bit more oil on the gears. I think it's there.
So now, this is officially the Way Down the Whole Super Larios Brothers podcast. You're like, the first 2 hours, he's not there. It's only one of you, outnumbered by tunes. But now Mikey's here. So it is truly a Super Larios Brothers podcast. And we want to get more Wyatt talking. Because... 2 hours. 2 hours dedicated to The Wire? Not enough.
I can't believe we wrapped it up so quickly.
Like, it's not even enough for a season, really.
I was on the first episode.
To keep going, yeah, to go through each episode and like talk about it. Because we mentioned it. No bad episodes of The Wire. It's not like Lost where there's that Jack's Tattoo episode. You're like, you really have to push through that Jack's Tattoo episode.
Or like the 3 or 4 episodes of Tony Soprano's in a coma. Like, oh, I don't care about this side. I don't understand it either.
Yeah, and Johnny Cakes, Gay Vito's like the alternate storyline. So like, oh, you're hitting me on both ends, which is nothing to watch. And this is only 5 episodes left. What the...
But why?
To go off on the Sopranos, what do you think of the final episode? Were you mad as shit like most people? Or were you like, oh, whatever.
Not happy about it.
Wait, this... Cuts to black.
Yeah, you know what? There's a lot of great stuff during that series finale, so I'd still give it like a C.
Yeah,
like, but it would have gotten like a B+.
If it just ends with them like just closing the menu and eating dinner.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Didn't have that crazy ending like bum bum bum.
Like what did happen? Yeah, I'm with you there. I still didn't mind it. Like, a lot of people really didn't like it. It was alright.
Do you think he dies? That's the whole point of it. Was supposed to be you can kind of put your own ending on it.
He's already.
What's your perception of how the show was going?
And then he, in a Playboy interview, like 2 years ago, the guy that created it's like, Well, I guess if you really want to know, no, Tony lived through that. I'm like, well, why would you give him why would you give him the shit ending?
Why would you say, oh, I had an answer for it, if you were going to be like, no, the question of this is really what the audience
thinks. Yeah, draw your own conclusion.
It was right after Gandolfini died. So I guess he thought at this point there would never... There's not going to be a movie. I was like, but that's all you were holding on to it for?
That's one thing I'm disappointed in. Like, Entourage is the only one to get a movie.
And it sucks. And the show sucks,
like,
honestly.
Deadwood's so good. Like, all these things Deadwood, are like, there's going to be like a movie made at the end. That's why they can't do another season. And none of them. And I don't think it's ever going to happen.
And then you're checking their Wikipedia pages every like couple years. Like, Rome movie, definitely not happening until 2030, if ever. Oh, no. Deadwood 2.
Oh, no. So, we talked about quite a bit. You haven't listened to the podcast yet. It's only been a day. It's still fresh in the can.
Less than 12 hours.
As we in the industry like to call it. But, obviously, we want to have you in here. Now, we've done a Wire podcast prior to this. We had one.
Five years ago, back in the day,
it may be lost to time, unfortunately, because it was on my old Blip account, which was deactivated when the site was destroyed. So I don't know if anyone out there has that saved somewhere. I can maybe try to look find it. But in this situation,
I was
still
wrecked by the end of it. that was supposed to be an hour and turned into like three, and I was like, brr.
We were like using Skype to do it, and his like connection, his computer in his room sucked so much. Yeah. Kept disconnecting it, so it was like,
wait, you're just rooms away? Why the fuck would you guys?
Because we didn't have a big mic like this back then, so we didn't have a way to record other than like me getting on my computer, him on his.
It's been said nothing but.
Oh, you want me to shut that up? Yo, poop will tell me how average it is, but don't do that.
It's an
expensive mic.
Good job, that is.
But no, it was one out there, so I guess it's a chance for you to restate your thoughts. So the questions that were out there, we'll throw out one. I guess we'll do top five characters. Because you seem pretty baffled that Nico made it onto both Tommy and Sean's list.
Ludicrous. Just flat out ludicrous. He would make a top 10 list, even.
You gotta be kidding. Nico's the shit.
He's just such a vanilla character.
With a girlfriend with huge tits.
Is that all it takes now?
Why does
Nico's
girlfriend?
Name one other girlfriend with huge tits.
Why doesn't Nico's girlfriend make the list then? Not instead of Nico.
You give me like $1 million. I couldn't even give her like her first initial. I got nothing. Yeah, like she was as good tits. Nico's
actually,
girlfriend.
That is.
And I've googled her at least three times, and I still don't remember the name.
This is a good question. I was asking Sean this. We couldn't figure out what's the name of the white guy, the white druggie with bubbles, who eventually like he breaks off from that guy. Just
oh, Johnny.
Johnny. There you go.
I forget what his last name was. He had like a weirdly. Johnny Sticks or something.
I just remember when it was like Bubbles from like, I'm gonna make you brown, man. And he's like, man, I think he's like, I'm brown, dude. He's like, you're not even beige, motherfucker.
That was a great line.
That's why Bubbles, man. Top five. Have you?
Bubbles is definitely a top five. Before this gets too, did you guys talk about Sean's old joke about the red hat?
You even lost me on that. It was my joke?
Yeah.
Got nothing.
About, you remember the red hat that like Bubbles used to like walk around and put on people?
Oh. I don't remember a joke.
So that way, like when the hat was on him, the cops knew, like, alright, that's a player. And you made a joke like, what if some like random homeless guys are like, I'll take that hat.
It is a pretty sweet hat. The three hats. It
he gets in there, just taking pictures. Alright, we caught the new kingpin, everybody.
No, give me that hat back. That hat's not for sale.
At no point did they show him ever selling any hats. It's a shame. They're pretty nice hats.
That's why I can't make him my number one character. He lost a lot not selling hats.
Yeah, McDonald's, usually.
Alright. I'll do my number five. I'll do them back to back, and you can feel free to stop me if you hear one that sounds ludicrous. I'll go Stringer Bell, number one.
As your number one?
Yeah.
That's snitch, bitch.
Tough. I'm gonna go. I gotta go. Lester Freeman, number two. Bunny Colvin, number three. Omar, number five, and Bubbles.
Omar is number five.
Yeah.
Wait. So
wait. Hold
Bubbles
on.
Is number
that,
four.
Did I did. Hold on.
Counting?
I did Stringer, Lester, Bunny. Stringer.
You're like number three, Bunny Colvin. Number five, Omar.
I'm gonna go Stringer, Lester, Bunny, Bubbles, Omar.
Number five.
Bodie doesn't make your list?
That's a tough list not to put him on. That's why when I hear
McNulty
somebody...
didn't make it.
That's when
Sabatka.
I hear somebody shoveling out good real estate on their top five list for Nico.
Yeah, Lester Freeman just didn't do anything
for Nico Sabatka.
He was awesome. He was the shit. He was so gangster. And he's a white dude. I respect that.
But if you said the character Sabatka, you'd definitely think I was talking about Frank. There's no way you'd think I was talking about Nico.
Alright, you got me there. But he didn't go by Sabatka. Like, Frank always went by Sabatka. Like, Nico's dad.
He dominated that role more than Nico did. Flat out in that
season. Frank was in my top five, too.
In my top five, but I think he did a way better job than Nico. I think he's a way cooler character. A lot more to, like, kind of dig into.
Well, season two was my favorite season. So, I was pretty heavy on them.
Less black people.
That's what Scotia said.
Yeah. Scotia. Called out the season.
Just like me.
You don't like all them black people, Sean. What's up with that?
And I got anything wrong? Yes, go, go.
Alright, so is there anything in my top five that you're like, ridiculous?
Lester Freeman doesn't do it for me.
Stringer Bell is number one.
Yeah, I don't know.
He seems to have an issue with that. He says Stringer Bridge.
It's hard for me to put Avon over Stringer because Stringer has so much more screen time.
Yeah, second season, definitely.
But like, every aspect of Avon was awesome. Like, he was so, like, in his way smart. He ran the business extremely well. Yeah. It only went to shit was when he left.
No, it went to shit when he came back and tried to start a turf war over a couple of shitty corners.
Well, he needs those corners. He makes it very clear. He needs the corners.
You don't understand. It's about product. Doesn't matter all these territories.
Well, the terraces went down. You're not following this? Any corners?
Any questions? And this is when...
Do you know you look like a punk ass man?
Motherfucker!
That was one thing we could talk about.
That's the funniest line, I think, in the whole show. Are there any questions? Does Chad recognize we're going to look like a bunch of punk ass bitches? It's like,
motherfucker! Like, slamming the
podium. Like, 7-foot Stringer Bell.
I think the fair part is that Shamrock's like, he had the floor, string. He had the floor!
You got to yield to him. Oh, man. That was the other thing we brought up, the funniest moments from The Wire. Any moments that pop into your mind from that?
That would be my number one. Number two is probably second season. Lester's like doing work on the computer for the doc thing, and Bunk's just like bouncing this tennis ball on the wall, like near him. And then finally it bounces off and hits Lester right in the head. Lester doesn't even react, and Bunk's just like, he doesn't say anything. It's all like gestures, like vaudeville, like, oh, panic, like, oh, and then he's just like, I'm gonna leave. Don't say anything. And then, but then the next scene of the two of them is like Bunk, like hungover, trying to type something on the computer, and Lester just bouncing a ball like an inch away from his head against the wall repeatedly.
Oh, I brought up the scene too where Bodie's in there with Herc and Carver, and they're trying to play good cop, bad cop, and he sees right through it the whole time, and he just says something that pisses off Carver, and Carver just starts beating the shit out of him, and like it just cuts away, and the last thing he hears, like, he's supposed to be the good cop, you dumb motherfucker. So many good lines.
That's a great one. Lester and Bunk interrogating like that African security guard at the docks, where it's obvious he doesn't speak any English whatsoever, and they're just like, "Get you goomy, motherfucker."
I like
Mish Mash Mimmy Jimmy Dimmy.
When Bunk shows up to like, was it third season when like the new office, and he shows up like a sweatshirt and like sweatpants.
Yeah.
And they just look at him all strange. They always wear suits. Like, what? I was told a downtown motherfucker like myself to wear what I want, not at my home office. You know, like, and kiss my ass. And he, like, shakes it a little bit.
Or you, who, McNulty?
What was the that lieutenant's name? You couldn't think of it.
Jay something.
Landfill? Is that what they called him? Landsman?
Lansden, maybe? It was Jay Lands. They didn't call him Landfill.
I thought they did call him Landfill.
I don't think ever to his face.
I don't remember any Landfills.
I think it was like, his first name's definitely Jay. I think his last name's Lansdale or Lansden, something like that.
And to bring it to Sean, how long and how frequently did we do the Yoo-Hoo McNulty thing after I started watching The Wire?
We definitely got each other a few times. At least a couple.
He really remembers it very fondly. At
least a couple years it was going on.
Yeah, no, it went for a while of like gaining each other occasionally. Like, why? Like, oh, like Mikey.
Especially when we're in the same apartment, we're like 10 feet away from each other.
There's a lot of times like I'd hear Mikey go into the bathroom. Like, well, I'll just stand outside the bathroom, pulling my pants down, waiting for him to open the door.
Or he was sleeping in the living room. There were no walls. Like, I needed to go. There was the pathway to the kitchen. I had to go by 20 times a day if I was home.
if my pants had fallen down while I've been sleeping, I'm aware my butt's hanging out, it would very often just be like, I'm still sleeping. I just like start shaking. Like, hey, oh my god, dude! Like, pull the cover up real quick.
Good. Got it. Good. This is the minimal amount of effort to moon me. It's so easy. I just have to, like, I can't look to the left. Oh, but it's the only window where sunlight comes in. I'm drawn to it like a person.
Spiros. That's his name.
Spiros, yeah.
That's what they call him. Got any favorite quotes from the
he
show?
He might be a better character than Nico, honestly.
Why are you shitting on Nico so much? You're kidding. Like, how do you hate him?
You built him too high. I don't hate him at all. He's very vanilla.
How is he vanilla?
Ziggy's a better character. I mean, he's annoying as shit, but I'd say Ziggy's a more fleshed out,
more
genuine character.
I guess.
Yeah.
You just don't have any Nico.
Do you think he's really hot? Is that it?
I mean, more than Tommy. I thought I was going to shock you too. But he's, I guess. But
I was
like,
a total dreamboat. I mean, DB. That's what we call him. DB.
DB Tommy.
Yeah. Really have a thing. He's construed as like DP Tommy.
I don't want him to think that. I don't want
that's
him to
what he has
cries.
To think by now.
All right. I think this should make a nice transition into a most overrated character.
Nico.
You fuck. I'm going to Lester Freeman. I don't even mean it.
Mr. Freeman.
This will make you mad.
You're out of here.
I don't even believe it.
Motherfucker.
That's why I'm going to cast my vote.
A real Lester Freeman fan would have never, even in jest, said that. So you're clearly not a Lester Freeman fan.
He's no Nico.
Nico's no Nico. I don't know what you've built for him in your head.
Man, he's only saying this now because there's only one person defending him. Because yesterday,
yeah,
like,
yesterday,
Nico's actually not that bad.
Yeah, total yesterday,
he's definitely number six on my list.
You're number six.
You're total cat.
Yeah, unofficial like, number six. I didn't want to anger Tommy. He was right there and like solid, just like jabbering.
We brought the check Tommy stuff. He was already kind of brewing on that. He was
getting kind of hot.
It's like, remember that when I could easily just shove you around Tommy because I felt like it and it was bigger. How fun.
See, I was smart. I established my dominance when he was young and small and fat, kind of. You guys are fucked.
So, favorite quotes in the series? Any that spring to mind? And you always, like, go to or pull?
I wasn't a huge fan of the character, but Carver's wife. The last season.
I don't remember Carver's wife.
But he's like this real short-haired, like older black lady that she eventually, like she kind of stuck by his side while he became...
Oh, Colvin's wife. Or Daniels.
Yeah, Daniels. I remember Daniels' wife.
Daniel Carver?
Lieutenant Dan Daniels?
Lieutenant Daniels. Sorry, who's Carver?
Carver. I had to stop. I was like, was Carver even married?
Lieutenant Daniels, yeah. His wife. While in the fifth season when he's just getting like run to the toilet, he's like, I'm just thinking of quitting because I'm tired of this game, juking the stats, his whole thing. And she just kind of she says, all I know is if it is a game, you cannot win if you do not play. I thought that was pretty good.
A lot of one of the many references to the game that's usually often spoken generally by the drug side of things, but... It was one of those few moments
when
I nailed it.
Somebody at work gets fucked over because they volunteered for something. I'm like, look at you. Giving a turn when it wasn't your turn to give a fuck. Giving a fuck when it's not your turn.
Like, I'm just getting coffee for everyone. It's not
going to
be a deal.
I didn't know I was going to have to wait there while they slow roasted the duck.
That's a good one. Can I get a Jameson? Bushmills, okay? That's a Protestant wiki.
I still say that.
That's good. I like lining people up for it, too, that I know have seen the show. I'm like, oh, Bushmills.
Under your breath.
Yeah, Protestant. Yeah, Protestant. It's free.
Landsman, that is his name. Landsman. Jay Landsman.
Okay.
I'm sure at one point they call him Landsville or something like that.
I don't think... Definitely not while he's within earshot.
I'm not while he's in earshot, but I'm sure like outside of that.
His toast is amazing, too. That whole funeral scene, whatever season that is. Is that the second?
The McNulty one or the one that actually...
The original, right? Yeah. Where the guy died, yeah. Was that from the second season?
I don't want to say after later than that, because they get the Stinkum murder like wrapped up. That's why like McGoldie fucks him on the first season, right? So I want to say second or third.
Well, he gets sent to the docks. Yeah, I don't remember. It was a big opening for one of the seasons, I thought. I could be wrong. But a great scene. And Jay's toast is just amazing.
Where he shits on him. Like, he wasn't the best cop. Remember that one case? Yeah. That was 40-year career they did okay at? Like, that's all he had.
He put that one to best.
Yeah. Wrapped it up.
He starts it with that over-the-top intro. Like, what's this golden-throated motherfucker out here?
I don't know why they keep letting the guy that cries keep him in the eulogies.
Why, Jay?
Yeah.
I don't need a good orator.
Yeah. The break off from the... Why, do you remember...
Officer Sean died. I guess we'll just have Herc deliver his eulogy. Panty soup!
You remember Scott's wedding?
Yeah.
They're crying. This is going to ruin the Wire podcast.
Oh, the best man losing his shit.
Bawling. Did you go to like the after party where he actually gave the speech?
Yeah, I saw it.
I heard it was really good, wasn't it?
He didn't get too far into it.
Yeah, he cried then, too. There was like six of us there. Like, no, like, besides you, everyone knew him from over my entire life, I've known Rettinger. Nah, fuck. Say his name. Spoiler alert, it's Rettinger.
Okay. He's listening, like, oh, my secrets! My secret! I was with you on Nico, too. Now it's just you and Tommy.
I feel that very safe.
In most mental patients.
I mean, we're going to do a battle royale with Nico or Freeman. Very safe on my side.
Oh, they're fighting each other? What?
Or his fans are fighting each other.
A battle of intellect? You think that Nico's...
No, we're not doing like a trivia crack. like a Royal Rumble, me and Tommy against you two shitting on him. Then Nico has like a third guy coming in.
That's just a straight up tag team match. It's hardly a Rumble.
What the third? Like, Freeman's there too. He's there to help us.
That was his talent. Oh.
Lester Freeman in his mid 60s at this point.
Straight out of 95% sure he's still alive. I don't think he's dead, but
I mean, I don't really know.
I'm pretty sure Nico's definitely not, because he's in that one show somehow. You know, he's Liev Schreiber's brother.
Wait,
the guy that played Nico.
Liev Schreiber. What show are you on?
The Brink is the one that's currently on. Tim Robbins.
Were we both immediately going to be like, he was Sabretooth in Wolverine Origins?
Yeah, that's what he was, Sabretooth in Wolverine Origins.
I promised Terry this wouldn't turn to Marvel.
He played Orson Welles in a Citizen Kane, like, kind of pseudo drama. Came out, or K-10 or something.
You ever see Citizen Kane?
Yeah, years ago.
It's not that great. Like, I didn't really love it.
I liked it. I watched it when I was like 14 or 15.
I still don't understand the Rosebud. Like, that was his sled, right?
It was his childhood.
So it was a good thing he said Rosebud then?
It made him slightly more human. Like, oh, he did amass like a ridiculous amount of wealth and power, but he still just missed being like a carefree kid. Huh. Did I just have to explain Citizen Kane to you?
Yeah. I was probably high as shit. I'm pretty sure I was forced to see
a sled? He's got tons of money. Get a better sled. Because they're burning it in wood.
I've been going through the Wire quotes Twitter page, just pulling up something. I forgot there's D'Angelo, not many great quotes, but he did have one in reference towards the end where he talks about the Great Gatsby. He said, the past is always with us, where we come from, what we go through, how we go through it, all this shit matters. Because Gatsby, who he was, what he did, because it wasn't real. And he wasn't willing to get real with the story. That shit caught up to him. A pretty good quote from that character. He had like a good final.
Yeah, that season. And Where's Wallace? That's a pretty sure.
Where's Wallace? Well, that and the classic chess scene where it's like, you know,
with Wallace,
Avon's the king, the queen, that Stringer Bell getting shit done. Rook is the stash of who's all over the place. You guys the pawns. What's that horse piece do? What horse piece?
Like, he had nothing else to go with.
Yeah, it's just like, that's kind of like the cops chasing us in a very particular L-shaped pattern that I have to count out every time. What horse piece? Patink!
Kind of like, it's a knight. It goes in L-shape. I got nothing for you.
You know, that's kind of stinkum because he, look over there. It's cops.
Your guys are pawns. This guy's no.
We always know Weepe moves in an L-shaped pattern. You're a pawn. That's what I'm getting.
Stop worrying about what the horse does. That's the horse's business. Is none of yours, pawn.
Here you go, giving a fuck when it ain't your turn to give a fuck.
You ain't even Weebay high enough. He doesn't even find out what the L piece does.
We did talk about how Weebay could have just easily told, like, the entire car ride with D'Angelo, when he's like asking where we're going, why?
Yeah.
Like, why don't we make this like, oh, it's gotta feed my fish. Relax, yeah. I'm just gonna show you, drop you off. Like, there's no reason to build suspense for him.
That a man of instinct like that, it's a street guy, it had to have been like, just fucking with him.
Unless he took that no talking in the car rule, like, to heart, even about fish feeding.
I ain't got no fish, man. You know that. Just grilling them the entire time.
I wonder where I have those fish. Who do you think fed them afterwards? Naaman?
Definitely wasn't the mom. I think in the fourth season, every time they showed Naaman at home, like, there were at least two or three scenes of him feeding the fish. You knew she wasn't doing it. Expensive fish.
When he gets brought in with Colvin, do you think he took all the fish with him?
That was part of it. He wants another po' boy, coleslaw, and fries, and all his fish in his cell.
That's right. He did have a thing like a po' boy and fries.
Did they have any more strawberry Fanta? Or what was strawberry soda?
Yeah, strawberry soda.
All like, out of strawberry. Tropicana, okay?
And no coleslaw. That was good. He's like, my last, like, good meal. Damn it.
Then he goes to prison. He's getting fried chicken and playing Xbox with Avon.
It's a pit beef sandwich, right?
I think with extra horseradish. I remember that.
Yeah, extra horseradish. It's like, oh, man. You're not going to be kissing anyone. Oh. All
right. Well, any last thoughts you want to get on the wire? Because we starting to run long already.
All right. There's no one, I hope, that voted Stanfield over Barksdale.
No. We all were pretty staunch. Like, yeah, Avon and Stringer actually had, like, a humanity to them, whereas Marlowe's just pure coldness.
I feel like
we have argued, though, between who is the better enforcer between Chris and Weebe.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris, hands down.
I think we put Weebe. Yeah, Chris is almost like a number two in that. Like, he takes the Stringer Bell role, too. Yeah. Along with the guy that
does hits on the side.
He's definitely a combination of those two. Although I don't think Marlowe takes his advice too much outside of hits.
No, but there is that scene at the end where
Seem to actually like each other, or at least Marlowe considers him a friend.
Yeah, where like when Chris gets put in jail, you just see the final scene is him like walking up to the chain fence, and you see Weebe come up to him, and they're just talking, and you're just like, ah, oh, that's kind of cool, like the generals for each army.
And we've talked about that how many times, that like, why was that not a spinoff? Weebe and Chris in prison, both of them are doing shit.
You tell me you can't make a shit ton of money doing that.
We did a Survivor Series team, though, didn't we? It's like you could pick anyone, like street level, no cops from The Wire.
And forming a 4-man team off that. So yeah. I can mix crews.
You can do Barksdale's and Stanfield's.
Is Omar an option?
I'll let you two go together. Yeah.
All right. So
anyone that's not a cop.
Omar. Oh, so you're going first? So you're going first.
Okay. You guys can flip a coin.
Oh, we back.
Yeah, I thought got the diabetes. Am I going first? I don't get Omar.
I thought we were picking it. All right, fine.
All right, Omar's on the table as his brother Mazone.
I'm still going Omar. My brother
Mazone. And his gay partner, Lamar. Whatever.
I gotta keep Omar happy. So break number two.
Lamar definitely didn't look like Omar's type. He's a pretty fat dude.
So do we draft it like back and forth, or is he just picking his four?
You gonna let him go first just because he's the guest, or do you want me to find the quarter?
No, he can go first.
Omar.
This is the tough one. Survivor Series team.
His brother
Mazone. I'm gonna go Chris.
You going, Mikey?
No, just keep it at two. It's going to thin too
Do I want...
I guess I'll take Shamrock.
do I want Poot or Shamrock?
I've never seen him hold a gun, but...
Then Brother Mazone.
Yeah, I kind of saw this coming. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to take Weebe. I'm going to go with the real street team on this.
I think Chris was the smarter pick.
Snoop.
I'll go with Bodie. Good, solid soldier.
Michael.
And I'll finish off with Slim Charles.
I like Slim.
That's a nice pick, Slim Charles. So
I think
Mikey,
I get
as impartial as his older
what
brother.
What were your first Omar, Brother Mazone, and Michael? That's rough.
it's pretty tough. It's very
they're
much
hitting
like
you from all ages too.
In all walks of life.
Oh, and
very normal, very eccentric.
Your fourth pick, a canard.
I'm like, oh. Well, that's infighting. Canard's going to shoot the shit out of Omar out of nowhere.
I want to put Canard in an incubator and just get him in 15 years when he gets out of prison a monster. I'd probably have to go Sean's team. Your team's solid, though.
It's tough. It's like he gets Omar right off the bat, and I'm like, I can't. Like, I feel like I'm giving up Brother Mazone, but I need, like, some kind of strategy here. And I'm like, I guess I'll go with the pure street-level gang team.
Yeah, I'd rather have Chris at the head of that than Brother Mazone. I mean, Omar's not really a leader either, so.
You wouldn't follow? I would follow Omar to the gates of hell.
I guess those two lesbians. I mean, yes.
It would be right up to him putting the tip in.
His boyfriend's had.
No, I thought they killed the two girls.
One of them died. Yeah, one
died.
Right,
yeah.
Omar's like boyfriend at the time shot him.
Yeah, and then he got tortured and didn't die. The first season guy died.
Yeah, they did torture. Well, Brandon's the first one.
Yeah.
And then like Miguel's the second one or something.
Yeah,
like
some
that.
Hispanic.
I still find it disappointing that Omar doesn't have a birthday. Like, who doesn't know how old they are? He just gives a random guess. Like, I don't know, 29-ish?
You have to have a birth certificate. You've been arrested several times, so there has to be, like, some proof you exist.
Like, I would want to know that.
They're like, here's all your government information. You want to look it over before signing it? Nah.
Meh.
Oh, I don't know what day I was born. That'd be interesting.
Oh, we never even brought up Omar's grandma.
You don't shoot on a Sunday. Who does that?
And she was in a church hat, like just like string a bell. Like,
not one of Stringer's finer moments. I'll grant you that.
Bang, but she was in a church hat. Like that's even like the line. But like, she was in a church hat. Fuck.
If Sundays were like, at least it would show Stringer Bell still had like an old school ability to him, instead of like the sneaky, conniving businessman
like
type.
A shithead through and through.
That's a very bold statement. I won't co-sign that.
Like, it's definitely not top five worthy, right? Yeah, is that, like, he wasn't that great.
Oh, please. How many people watched that show just for Stringer Bell? I mean, you finished it.
You do have a hard on for Idris Elba, though. Like, I feel like your vision...
You don't? You don't like Idris? Big Riz? Come on.
Should he be James Bond, brother?
Yeah, as long as it gets done in, like, the next few years.
Would it just be one movie?
They got to get him moving. I don't think the world's ready yet for another like Bond in his 50s, and he's already like 45, isn't he?
He's an old gentleman.
I mean, he'd look good, but you watch those like old Bond movies where it's like Roger Moore in his mid 60s. It's like it's just embarrassing. It's clearly not him doing any stunts. It's like Kevin Nash dancing in the Magic Mike movies.
Joe Manganiello could be like the butt like. The person who gives him all the cool gadgets. I'm not a big James Bond fan. Is that Q?
Wait, hold on. Was this third Michael or was this third Snoop?
I thought you were just naming people. Did you actually put Snoop on your team?
Yeah.
Snoop made it.
Instead of Michael?
No, Michael's on the team. Oh,
I feel like he was fourth. I feel like I fucked up. I should have grabbed Michael in that spot instead of Bodie.
Or even Snoop. Snoop's useless to him. Snoop ain't taking shit from anyone but Chris.
It beats Bodie. As much as I love Bodie.
I'm putting her down for first one kill, honestly.
Bodie's.
Look at that Yankees hat. Ba-da, ba-da. I love the part where, like, I guess it's Snoop. Like, Michael's trying to reference that song that's like, that's how you know they're from Baltimore. I think it was like, jingle in, jangle in, jingle in.
And I remember
and Snoop's like, what's a radio? What's this music? Like, she doesn't even listen to music.
Because they walk up to the one guy, and she asks him, like, who's your favorite DJ and whatever? And he's like, oh, New York Mike. It's actually the dude's name.
Yeah.
Like, no, he's and, like, on... Chris has to stop her real quick. No, it's a real thing. Stop.
He's on the Be More Morning Crew. You know, Wacky G and the Bunch.
I don't know why. I love the scene where it's Stringer Bell talking to the guy from D.C., and they like, go back to like, Stringer Bell coming all the way out of here and not using everything. I got to try out, like, I think he calls it Chocolate City. And then the guy from D.C. is like, we call it Drama City now. Like, yeah, let's check it out sometime. I never liked that go-go shit. He's like, you got to see it live, though.
I didn't get that, like, go-go was a different, is, like, a new kind of music, too. I was thinking, like, go-go, like, 50s girls in, like, bikinis. Like, I guess it's a hip-hop thing, too?
I mean, that, like... you being an HBO person too, you ever see that Dave Grohl show where he goes?
Yeah, from I've seen a few episodes.
The one in DC, I guess that's like the like their main, like not the main, but like very big in DC is like a go-go-ist thing.
It's like a rock,
or like it's like a kind of like a reggae-ish, rockish with some. I don't think there's any actual lyrics in any of the songs. They all sound the same, kind of like Irish music. Okay. It's all kind of the same.
I remember thinking, like, why would any black person be going to a go-go bar to listen to the Monkees play?
You just got to see it live.
All right, gentlemen, any final thoughts? Final last bit you want to throw in about The Wire?
No, we'll take it so much more, like, in the next week. Like, oh, no.
Car ride to the train station.
Oh, turn it back on.
Christopher. Edit it.
Like, God damn it. You know how many edits I've had to do on this podcast? Because you can't stop bringing up all your shady past dealings.
We didn't do all the saddest moments. Oh, was your saddest moment with Carter?
I thought you'd be there. You said you'd be there for me, officer. Where were you? You're just like, oh. And knowing that Carver did try to do everything to make it right.
I wasn't prepared to cry this episode.
I did have a couple of questions real quick. Get them off my chest. Okay. Christopher Gay, question mark. Yes? No?
No.
What's with the notepad?
It's yes.
I do have a notepad.
You do have a notepad.
I have a notepad as well.
You do not.
Well, not on me.
And Goober. Where the fuck did Goober come from? How's that your go-to insult to each other?
Again, I just use it because it's like a cleaner way. Like, nowadays you get so much shit if you use the word retarded or like, you know, faggot or things like that. So, like, my good way to just insult people, I just call them goobers. It's still, I feel like it's still an insulting word, but it's not like anyone, like, has an offended... You know,
I can use it at my office and not like, not worried about getting dragged like, by my ear into the...
Like, you gigantic goober. What are you doing? Because it's like calling someone an idiot, but it's such a funnier sounding word.
Yeah, it definitely sounds
like... It'd be like a fart truck thing, like, who came up with it first?
Fart chuck?
Well, fart truck.
Oh, fart truck.
Like,
oh.
But not like a goober. Like, who was the first one to start a goober?
Probably called me it one more often than I did.
I mean, it's from like the 20s. It's not a new expression.
I was talking about like who began with you guys, but
probably me.
Yeah,
it seems like something creative that I'd come up with.
Why is this page on my notebook? You are Cooper Hart.
Oh, see, I love it.
Oh God, there's so many pages. P.S. Appreciate the stay.
I do.
And sorry about the notepad. It's like 18 pages you just wasted.
I apologize. Hey, I left the heart.
We just stoned his hell last night.
I was bored as shit. You went to bed at like 10 o'clock.
It was like 11:30 I went to bed. We were like, we're going to take a quick nap so we can be up when Mikey gets home.
At like 8. How much? Like a nap's like 2-3 hours,
I thought. I didn't say it was going to pop right back up and then come downstairs. It's like, yeah, wake up probably around 7 or 8. Mikey's here. We'll just all hang out. Get some sleep.
Uber.